Good evening. My name is Michael Fee. It's an honor for me to serve as your moderator at this special town meeting tonight. I've determined that a quorum is present, and I hereby call the meeting to order. Ladies and gentlemen, please allow me to introduce you to Madeline Paquette. She is a talented LS student who is a member of three different singing groups at the high school, Accent A Cappella, Cora de Chicas, and Acquired Taste. She's here to sing the national anthem. Please rise if you are able.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Thank you, Madeline Paquette. I understand that we have several out-of-town guests here tonight. It's required by our rules that if you are not a Sudbury voter and you don't have one of these, that you need to sit in the back as directed by the clerk. There's a patch over in the back left as well as in the back right where out-of-town visitors are sitting tonight. I've instructed these folks, some of whom have asked me for permission to speak, that at the time that their article is called, that they can move down to the front so that it's easier for me to recognize them and get the hall to either allow or deny them the right to speak to a particular motion or article. So, as you know, in the event there's a problem or an injury or an accident or illness, there's usually an assistant moderator appointed to serve in case I can't do that. I've asked Mr. Coe, who has graciously agreed to serve in that role, to do so again tonight. May I have a motion appointing Robert Coe as assistant moderator? Thank you. Is that received a second? It does. I need a majority vote to pass this. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Congratulations, Mr. Coe. For the record, I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of timely mailing of the warrant to all residents. I can also report to the hall that the town's certified free cash in the general fund is in the amount of $3,074,985, and this amount was certified by the Mass DOR and reported to me by the town accountant, Christine Nyhan, on September 22, 2016. Allow me to quickly introduce the town officials to you. Please raise your hand when I call your name. To my right, Town Clerk Rosemary Harvell, and our new Assistant Town Clerk, Rose Miranda. Welcome. To my immediate left, Town Council Barbara St. Andre. To her left, Board of Selectmen, Susan Giuliano is the chairperson, Chuck Woodard, vice chair, Pat Brown, Bob Hardy, Len Simon. Town Manager Melissa Murphy-Rodriguez. Finance Committee, Susan Berry is the chairperson, Joan Carlton, vice chair, Jeffrey Atwater, Jeff Barker, Adrian Davies, Tammy DeFault, Jose Garcia-Mateen, Fred Fleurieu, Brian Semple. In the front row, Mark Thompson is the technology administrator, Patty Golden is the senior administrative assistant to the town manager, Dennis Kahane is the finance director. Megan Donahue, director of planning and community development. Welcome. Marianne Bilodeau, director of HR and assistant town manager. Bill Miles is the fire chief. Scott Nix, chief of police. Dan Nason, DPW director. First day on the job. Welcome. Jim Kelly is the combined facilities director. And from the town clerk's office, Beth Perry. All right. There are fire exits in the rear and of the auditorium where you entered, as well as back behind me through the stage. The bathrooms are also located immediately across the hall to the rear of the to the rear of this exit, and as well as in the cafeteria. There are refreshments tonight. They're provided by the Girl Scout 6th Grade Cadet Troop 65254, Troop Leader Shirley Hittig, and Girl Scouts Elizabeth Hittig, Aviel Stutman, and Bree Tuxbury. Thank you, Girl Scouts. Please eat your cookies outside, as only water is allowed in the auditorium. I'd also like to thank Scoutmaster Peter Fishman and the members of Sudbury Boy Scouts Troop 63 for their assistance with the microphones during tonight's meeting. Tonight we have Ryan Grummer, Andrew Mossy, the famous Colton Simon. Where are you, Colton? All right. Teddy Liza, Ben Liza, and Noah Safar. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate your help. Finally, as always, I'd like to thank the crew and staff of Sudbury TV. They do such a great job with all of our town meetings and a variety of other events. Thanks to staffers Lynn Puro, microphone master Cliff McGann, Lisa von Lichtenberg, and the volunteer crew members Rob Carter and Sam Skiffington on cameras, Peter Ciccarello on graphics tonight. Some procedural matters before we get going. I hope everyone has reviewed the warrant. It was relatively thin this time around, so not that tough a read. Unlike annual town meeting, it omits the more beefy procedural primer that I usually put in. And so that's missing from tonight's warrant. Can I ask how many are attending town meeting for the first time? Okay, that's unusual. So most of you have been here before. I will assume that we will be able to get through some of the procedural issues without much ado. If you have any questions at all about any of the procedural matters that we're discussing tonight, stand up, raise your card, say I have a point of order, and we'll explain the procedural issue to you, and we'll move forward in that way. Just the basics, so everyone knows. Every time you address the hall, you have to begin by giving your name and address so the clerks can make an accurate record of the proceedings. If you want to be recognized, you have to raise your card. If you're standing in the back, sometimes it's a good idea for you to stand up because the lights are right in my eyes and sometimes I can't see all the way to the back. If you are recognized, you stand up, a Boy Scout will bring you a microphone, and you will be able to speak from that. You don't need to tap the microphone. You don't need to hold it right up to your face. Just hold it normally like you're about to eat an ice cream cone, and it should work just perfectly. As I mentioned, only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees and regional school employees and other elected estate officials may speak without leave of the hall. We're going to get to that later, as I understand Article 5 has quite a few out-of-towners that want to speak to it. Finally, and I find myself having to give this speech less and less as time goes by, but we should be all mindful of our obligation to treat each other with courtesy and respect. No matter how strongly we may disagree with someone's point of view, clapping, booing, hissing, or other audible noises for or against any speakers, either before, during, or after presentations will not be tolerated, and speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at another voter, a speaker, or a town official. If you do so, your right to speak may be terminated. Officers Matt Nardi and Chris Kelly from Sudbury Police Department are here tonight to ensure safety and good order. Thank you very much, gentlemen. On to the special town meeting. I ask for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, the officer's return of service notice, and the individual articles of the warrant. Does that have a second? It does. I need a majority vote to dispense with these procedural matters. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously, I think unanimously, and certainly by well more than a majority. Article 1, Street Acceptance, Trevor Way. Motion, Selectman Pat Brown.
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? Ms. Brown for a presentation.
Okay. Could I have slide one? Okay. A street acceptance is the town taking ownership of a privately owned roadway, and there is a minutely prescribed process in law for doing this. Slide two, please. Trevor Way is the road in question tonight. You can orient yourself with Boston Post Road across the bottom of the map and Horse Pond heading north. The Board of Selectmen report in your warrant describes all of this in pretty good detail until you get to the part where it says we will report at town meeting. Our further report is that all requirements for the acceptance of Trevor Way have been met. That includes determining the meets and bounds and cleaning catch basins. Slide three, please. You've seen all of this before at May Town Meeting. What happened was that to meet the requirements to accept Trevor Way exceeded the 120-day window that was opened when we approved acceptance on May 4th Town Meeting. So what we are asking you tonight, what a yes vote on Article 1 will do, is it will open another 120-day window to finally complete the last step of taking this down and recording it at the Registry of Deeds, so that we can finish accepting Trevor Way. The Board of Selectmen requests your approval of Article 1. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat Brown. Finance Committee for a report.
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Board of Selectmen report.
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 1? Right over here, Mr. Coe.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. Just to get myself oriented here, is this a street that adjoins the backside of the new development that's going to replace the Raytheon building?
Could you go back to slide two?
Or is this somewhere different?
It's actually a dead end. I don't believe that it does actually. Actually, slide two. Yeah. I don't believe that the road actually gets to the Raytheon development.
But it is roughly in the position of the back of the Raytheon property. Is that right?
Yes.
No.
Well,
no.
Well, I've got planning board over here. Chris, can you?
Does anyone? Mr. Brooke, Mr. Moore.
Sorry,
that's Raytheon.
So if you come up Horse Pond Road, it's the first road on your right. So there actually is the Bartlett, a very large Bartlett nursery property, is between the end of Trevor Way and the Raytheon property. It's just a three house. It's a four lot subdivision.
I see. Thanks.
Mr. Morley, name and address, please.
Chris Morley, 321 Old Lancaster Road.
Thank you. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 1? Questions, comments, concerns? I'm not seeing anyone. Okay, right here. Can we get a mic right down here, gentlemen? Thank you.
Yes, Mitchell Bisney, 21 Old Meadow Road. I want to know what the cost of this is, pro and con.
Ms. Brown, can you speak to that, or would you like someone else to speak to it?
I don't have exact cost numbers. If there's someone who does, then I'd prefer they speak.
Melissa, do you have any information?
Go ahead. Melissa Rodriguez, the town manager. There's no exact cost on what it would cost to maintain the road, but what would happen is that the town would take responsibility for plowing the road and for any maintenance that is now be necessary for the road. So we'd be responsible for filling potholes, doing any repaving that became necessary in the future, as well as plowing.
Does that answer your question, sir?
I'm sorry, I really don't understand what you were saying. Is there a cost to the cost? Is there any cost at all?
We don't have to purchase the road at all. What we do have to do is maintain it going forward. So there's a cost for maintenance.
And who's maintaining it now?
No one, right now the developer owns it. It's a private way. So they, if there's any repairs that need to be done currently, they'd be done by the abutters.
So is there a reason why the town should take on this extra burden, cost-wise, if it's being handled by the developer?
This was all discussed, at least in part, in Article 26, and I'm a little hazy on recalling the exact arguments at the time. However, my understanding is that we do customarily accept subdivision roadways as town roadways if they can be brought up to the standards that we want, and that's why there's this long legal process for doing it, because we're not going to accept it if, for example, you know, the catch basins are the wrong size or it's not properly paved. But we customarily do accept these roads and the ongoing maintenance costs that goes with them.
It allows us to maintain them in a good manner as well, which is important.
I'm sorry, Melissa, can you repeat what you just said?
Sure. I said it allows us to maintain the roads in good manner, which is important for public safety.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? I see no one. Are we ready for a vote? Okay. All those in favor, this requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor of the motion under Article 1, please raise your cards. All those opposed. That does not pass unanimously, but certainly by well more than a majority. Article 2. Yes, ma'am, please stand. That's correct, right? It's a majority. All right, we're going to have town council answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. When the warrant was printed, it was not clear whether or not we would need to appropriate any funds to accept this road. We do not have to appropriate any funds. Therefore, it's only a majority vote.
Does that answer your question, ma'am? Okay. Article 2. Street acceptance of, DPW rolling stock replacement. My understanding was that Mr. Woodard was going to speak.
You're going to.
I'm going to present. I'm going to make the motion, then you're going to speak.
Right? Okay. Motion by Police Chief Scott Nix.
And former acting DPW director.
So move to transfer from free cash the sum of $210,000 for the purchase of rolling stock / vehicles / equipment for the Department of Public Works, my former venue.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Woodard, for a presentation? Now, explain to me, are you splitting this presentation up or are you doing the entire thing? Very good. No, it's 5 minutes total, right?
5 minutes total? In that case, it's 2 and 3. Good evening. My name is Chuck Woodard. I'm a member of the Board of Selectmen, and I'm up here to basically introduce the capital articles you'll see tonight. Just a couple of just general comments. The town has a infrastructure. They have school, DPW buildings, vehicles, other equipment, with a total cost of $150 million. And our annual capital budget to replenish those assets as they wear out, as they need to be upgraded, et cetera, is only $400,000, or just above 0.25% of the total cost of those assets. And to put that in perspective, if you have a house that costs $300,000 to build and a couple of $30,000 cars, just as by way of example, your equivalent annual investment in replenishing those assets would be about $980. And I think you can appreciate that $980 is not enough to replace two cars periodically and take care of the roof, boiler, et cetera. So we've periodically had to go to the voters to ask for additional money for specific capital items. And in May, we put forward a number of items to supplement that $400,000 capital budget. And most of those items were turned down at the ballot, as most of you know. And let me assure you, we understand that they fail at the ballot. But I can also say that failure at the ballot does not change the need for those capital items. We still need them. We needed them then. We need them now. The town was behind in addressing our capital asset needs before that May ballot, and as a result of the failure, we're further behind today. So we're here tonight. The town moderator mentioned that our annual certification of free cash was received by the state. And once it's certified by the state, it's up to town meeting to decide what, if anything, to do with that free cash. As noted by the moderator, the amount of free cash is just over $3 million, and after setting aside the minimum balance recommended by the Finance Committee, the amount needed to maintain our stabilization fund and the proposed usage tonight for the DPW equipment and the security cameras, there will still be just over $2 million remaining. The free cash at LS, which is a separate legal entity, is roughly $1.2 million, and after setting aside the proposed usage tonight for the turf fields, there would still be about $442,000 remaining there. We still have the issue of maintaining the town's infrastructure. A lot of people, including myself, a lot of volunteers are looking at how best to proceed with a capital replenishment plan that will work for the voters. But in the meantime, with the availability of this free cash, we believe we have a responsibility to come back to you and say we'd like to spend some of that free cash on these most critical needs. And I'll turn it over to the chief to present the first of those requests tonight. And again, because we're proposing to use free cash, there is no request for a tax increase in connection with these articles. Thank you. Chief.
Thank you, Selectman Woodard. Again, Scott Nix, Chief of Police and former Acting DPW Director. When I took on the role as Acting DPW Director and seeing that we had failed at the vote with three items that were for the DPW, I kind of wanted to take a look while still carrying forward safety concerns. It wasn't that the three items weren't important back then, and they still remain important, but I wanted to kind of assess what was critical so we can turn it over to our new director so he can then really assess the fleet going forward. And being very public safety minded, the front end loader that we were talking about, we have a 2004 that will still remain in service but in a backup role in order to really enhance our operations for snow removal, sanding and salting operations, and it's also they will be used periodically throughout the rest of the year as well. You'll kind of see some projects that we've done. So one of the things we've been doing, you see a front-end loader here along with a backhoe. The front-end loader is much larger. It's easier to reach up into the sanders. It is able to dump faster and larger loads of salt and sand into the sanders, which then in turn gets them out there faster. I had one instance this past winter, which was not all that bad, where one of my officers was out in the roadway for an hour waiting for a sander. We ended up having to shut down the roadway for his safety as well as that of the people there. So, again, being cognizant of what the voters said no to the three items, I felt it important to at least continue letting it be known that this is a safety item that we want to go forward with to improve our operations while augmenting other things and have a little redundancy.
How much more time do you need?
30 seconds, sir.
Very good.
So as you see here, DPW using this to do a project for the schools. Again, a safety concern during the winter, concern with parents that are coming in to pick up their kids, maybe slipping and sliding. We paved a little area. We're going to put some bollards there. And this is just an example of lifting up high with a bigger machine than the backhoe in order to be able to load up. Obviously not a sander. This was taken during the summer operations. They never allowed me to drive it, but we do believe that it is something that's important for safety moving forward. Any questions? Thank you.
Okay. Hang out for a minute.
Yes, sir.
Finance Committee, Chairman Susan Berry for a report.
Before we speak about this particular article, I just want to make a few comments about the use of free cash for this article, which is Article 2, 3, and 4. The Finance Committee discussed whether using free cash was appropriate for these articles. Given that the certified free cash amount is a little over $3 million, we decided that in this case, using free cash of less than $500,000 this early in the year was acceptable to the committee. However, going forward, for additional town meetings both spring and fall, the Finance Committee will continue to review recommendations of the use of free cash on a case-by-case basis based on our policy and best practices for the use of free cash. Jose?
This loader will replace a problematic 16-year-old loader. After much discussion about alternative solutions, the Finance Committee determined that a replacement is the best alternative to provide the town with the three loaders it needs and that having this piece of equipment to support its snow removal capabilities this coming winter was a convincing argument for placing this item on the October special town meeting warrant. The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 2.
Len Simon from the Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, Mr. Howery.
The CIAC supports this article.
Excellent. Discussion. Who wishes to be heard on the motion under Article 2? Questions? Sorry, right here. Mr. Stein.
Robert Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. I'm against this for several...
Hold it back a little bit.
I'm against this for several reasons. Not on the principle of needing the machine, but on this whole process. The use of free cash is because we overestimated our expenses for the year and underestimated the revenue. Basically, we have been overtaxed. So now, in the past, what we have done is use these as capital debt exclusions. So we would have a town meeting and vote on it, and then it would also be required at the ballot box. Tonight, though, is different. Tonight, it's going to be decided with only a couple hundred people rather than the entire town having the opportunity to vote. So I find this disrespectful for the people that couldn't come tonight that would have been able to vote throughout the day from 7 in the morning till 8 at night. So I think this is a bad precedent that we are setting by using free cash, which is we were overtaxed, which technically we should be given the money back at the end of the year, rather than we're sitting with $3 million, so we might as well just blow it on anything that they come to have ideas on, because we have such a small crowd that won't be able to fully participate in the voting process. So this article and all the other articles were voted down at the voting booth just a few months ago by well over 1,000 people. So tonight they're trying to get around that idea and use free cash, and it's still very, very early in the year. We don't know come April or May, when the true budget season comes about, whether SPS, the high school, or the town needs money to maintain teachers and everything else. So if we blow the money now, there's a good chance in May we're going to be asked for a huge override for SPS and for other things. So I strongly advise people to vote no and let them do what they've done in the past and go for a capital debt exclusion come April or May to when town meeting is. That way they have two opportunities, the 200 or 300 people that go to town meeting, or the 1,000 or 2,000 that are able to vote between 7 and 8 o'clock at night.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Mr. Hardenberg.
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. My sense was that there was tremendous resistance to having capital overrides. Last year, there was a big push to say these items really should be in our budget. So now, if we go back to the capital budget plan, they would most likely fail again. The only way that strategy would work is if we have the override to bring these items into our current budget. And I think that's going to take a while. And we have winter is coming. Nobody's trying to say that these machines are not needed. It's just a question of how we're going to pay for them.
Thank you, sir. Who else wishes to be heard? Right here. Sir, come back. Ms. Gossels, right here.
Jamie Gossels, Spiller Circle. I'd just like to respond to 2 points that Mr. Stein made. First is that last year we did bring a lot of these articles to town meeting with their proposal to pay for them through capital exclusions. But prior to that, the year before, we did pay for a lot of capital items through using free cash in the same way that we're proposing to do it tonight. So I don't think there's a precedent either way. And the second point I'd like to make is that there's also a big question in the approach to using free cash and to suggest that it should be used for operating expenses opens a whole other can of worms, which I think we don't want to debate tonight, but it obviously brings up a lot of other issues. So I don't think we have to look at it as a precedent. I think we should think about the situation that we have right now for free cash. And I think also, I didn't come at the very beginning of time, I'm sorry, so I don't know if it was explained where free cash came from, but our understanding, my understanding as a member of the CIAC is that some of the money that's available now for free cash is because of new building projects that are happening in town now that weren't approved before, and so money from building permits, et cetera, that is now available wasn't available before, and I don't think we were overtaxed. It's new money that's now available that wasn't before. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gossels. Who else wishes to be heard? It's the gentleman all the way in the back. Sir, I have bad news for you. You have to take your hat off. Thank you.
Roger Nichols, 220 Old Lancaster Road.
Can you speak up, please, sir?
Roger Nichols, 220 Old Lancaster Road. If the money is approved to purchase the rolling stock, when would the purchase actually be made?
We hope to have the purchase prior to January 1st.
So that leaves, you know, assuming bad winter or whatnot, if we had to pay for extra snow removal, that means the money's already gone?
I didn't understand your question, sir.
If we wait to buy the loader in May, mm-hmm. we, in theory, could reuse the money for removing snow or whatnot in January, should that be necessary. Is that correct?
I don't believe so, because that's capital versus, I don't know. No, we wouldn't be able to use it in that manner, no.
Okay. Other questions? There's a gentleman right here in the middle.
Henry Knorr, 55 Goodman Hill Road. There was a lot of negativity this spring about capital expenditures, Mr. Stein included. And it seems to me there's a sort of syndrome here going on that, you know, we give money to government, we don't like what government does, so we don't want to give money to government. But, you know, if we don't give money to government to function, to do what it's supposed to do, it can't do what we expect it to do, and it's a vicious circle. At some point, we have to pay for things that we need. We have to pay for the things that government uses to provide the services that we want.
Okay. Mr. Woodard.
Thank you. I'd just like to correct or modify one impression left with regard to free cash. Free cash results from basically a budget surplus. A budget surplus is not budgeted. What happens is when we go to budget, and budgeting is not a perfect, it's not an exact, you make estimates and educated guesses, but you budget revenues including state aid, permits, and that kind of thing. So you come up with a revenue number. Then you budget your expenses so that they're no more than the revenue number, because you can't approve a budget that's out of balance. And even the expenses are not exact, because things like health care insurance, you never know exactly what the premiums will be. Employees may get married. Employees may drop out. But in any case, it's not exact. And the tendency, rightfully so, is to be conservative. So be conservative on the revenues, be conservative on the expenses, because you don't want to wind up in the middle of the year as we did in the spring of 2009, where revenues were less than projected, and the town in the middle of the fiscal year had to start cutting expenses. So, you know, we wind up with free cash. It's unfortunate. We would love to have taxed exactly the amount needed, but the worst scenario would be to budget poorly and run out of money mid-year. Thank you.
Okay. Who else wants to be heard? This is a gentleman way in the back.
Dave McCormick, 226 Old Lancaster. I have a couple of questions. I echo the idea that if you're going to spend everyone's money, you really should have, everyone should have a say on it. And so I think it's very different from a town meeting versus you know, everybody going and voting all day also. But I guess I have a couple of questions.
How much is recommended to keep in free cash after we spend on this? Have we looked at renting versus buying? And also, could you speak further on the safety concerns? Why it is? And I guess I ask that because I haven't seen it here, but I'd like to hear more about that.
All right, please. Let's break down those questions. First one was a free cash analysis. Ms. Berry, do you want to speak to that?
Yes. So, as I said, we have certified a little more than $3 million in free cash. The Finance Committee policy says we want to hold on to at least $500,000 of that for emergencies. Our policy also states that we want to use free cash to be sure that the stabilization fund is at least at 5% of the budget. So if we conservatively say those two numbers combined, we want to hold on to at least $700,000 in addition to what we're spending right now. It means that if we vote to approve all three of these articles using free cash, we would have a little over $1.9 million still left in free cash.
Okay, Chief, do you want to speak to the renting versus buying question?
Yes, sir. So we did look into what it would cost to lease, which the town is really moving away from the leases for really a philosophy perspective, but it's a little over $6,900 a month to lease such a loader. If you're looking to rent a used older one, probably in the area of $3,500 a month. We did look into that. But as far as putting a dollar value on the safety part, I never put a dollar value on the safety part of things. But I can tell you that two winters ago was deplorable. This past winter wasn't so bad. So it's kind of like the budgeting and stuff. You need to plan and make sure you can accommodate to make sure we're safe. One of the things that I did and that I've talked about with the new DPW director is really kind of revamping our snow removal and salt proceedings and stuff like that. To try to really be progressive with bringing those up to what I would call current day standards to make it safer out there for the residents, for our students, so we can make sure that we get them to school, so our residents can get to work, so public safety personnel can get to where they have to go during an emergency. Unfortunately, I've been there many times when it's hard for us to get to a place, to include even getting an ambulance up a road or to a place. So I never put a dollar value on safety.
Okay, Mr. McCormick, do you have another question? Okay.
I'm sorry. The question wasn't about a dollar value against the safety. The question was, would you speak more to the safety issues?
Okay.
Examples, what you're seeing out there.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, again, when I talked about the power of it and the size and be able to expeditiously put material into the sanders, that allows us to get them out quicker. I've seen many a times that roadways, particularly during commuting times, are deplorable, and part of that's due to we need to move our operations forward, but part of it's also the equipment not there to get it out as fast as we can. Like you said, I had an hour where my officer was on scene on Lincoln Road just this past winter that he had to shut down the road, and I was fine with it, but that then caused an imposition that people start going to other places, taking side roads, detours that then further impact other areas, not to mention a few complaints to 911, but we can handle that. But it's really, you know, the domino effect, and once you put that roadway down, how does it then back up the other roadways? And again, I'm not an expert on the DPW side of things. I'm going to leave that up to Mr. Nason. But I very much intend to work integrally with him to make sure that we're doing it right going forward. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments regarding Article 2? I'm seeing no one. Okay. I am seeing people over here. We have time for a couple more before I'll entertain a motion to call a question.
Good evening. My name is Brian Kane, and I live at 33 Victoria Road. So I have to agree with Mr. Stein on this one at a higher level of principle. I do feel like this is a matter of process. I agree we probably need the equipment, but it really does come down to process. for me, it's a matter of just making sure that we get out in front of these types of things and budget appropriately in advance. When we talk about these types of situations, I do believe that this should be something that's more of a town-wide vote as opposed to a town meeting. If we are going to all collectively buy into this as a town, everybody should have a right to vote. And I know not everybody can be here this evening to do that. I know that, as Mr. Stein also mentioned as well, you know, this came to vote several months ago and it was voted down by the people of this town. So I would like to know what the options are around as far as bringing this back to a town-wide vote as opposed to a vote here this evening.
Okay, anyone else? Right here.
Mike Goulet, 27 Middle Road. My question is just on throughput. If you increase the throughput of the salt because you have a bigger loader, do we have enough spreaders? Could it be because there's not enough spreaders and they couldn't get out to the streets?
No, we actually do. As a matter of fact, we currently have seven. Our typical route that we have put out historically has been five. My opinion is put six out. Again, it's with the knowledge of Mr. Nason. I want to work on that. Those are just my thinking, so you can get it out faster, quicker, things along those lines.
Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Quirk? Right here, down in front.
Gerald Quirk, 20 Scottswood Drive. I guess I want to point out on the matter of process that every registered voter in the town of Sudbury has the opportunity to be here. It can be more challenging, but it can also be challenging to get out on the first Tuesday in November to be able to do that. And what's fundamental about kind of democracy in small New England towns that these decisions are made at town meeting. And it is always the case that with respect to our operating budget, it is done in the context of town meetings. So there really is nothing particularly unusual here. It has gone to the voters for the second vote, which, by the way, happened after a near unanimous vote in favor of this at last year's town meeting with probably five or six times as many people as who were here tonight, because it was an incremental one-year tax assessment. There is not that situation here, and it's the right thing to do, so I support this article.
Very good. Okay. We're getting into the range where I will entertain a motion to call a question. Does anyone else wish to be heard? I wasn't meaning to scare anybody. If you wish to be heard, please raise your card. Okay. Looks like we're on to a vote. The quantum of vote required for passage is majority. All those in favor of the motion under Article 2, please raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes by nearly unanimously and certainly by well more than a majority. On to Article 3, town and school security and access controls, motion by Mr. Kelly.
Move to transfer from free cash the sum of $95,000 to be expended under the direction of the facilities director for the purpose of constructing, reconstructing, or making extraordinary repairs to Sudbury town buildings, including town school buildings, for the purpose of building safety, security, and access controls.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Kelly? Chief, why are you hanging around? I see. Okay.
We'll kind of join us a little bit.
let me know when it's your turn.
So thank you, Mr. Moderator. And my name is Jim Kelly. I'm the facilities director. With me presenting is Chief Scott Nix. This is a picture of the Peter Noy School taken several years ago. This is really where a lot of things changed for us in Sudbury and probably for many in the whole country. This was shortly after a horrible, horrible tragedy in Sandy Hook. And it's when we started locking our doors, and we had meetings with residents, and the residents asked the town staff, the town. What are we going to do? What do we need to do? We want to make our building safe. We want to do the best we can do for our town, for our residents. And that meeting was held at Curtis Middle School. So this is a picture of the noise school. This is a shot of the doorbell at the front door. And if anybody has been to any of the public schools in the last several years, you'll know you have to ring the doorbell, you have to get recognized, and it's a way to make sure that we have control over our buildings, particularly our schools. Peter Noyes, again, this was taken last summer. This was after a town meeting article a couple of Mays ago that provided the funds to go for the further steps for security and improvements in our buildings. We have already done some work at our Flynn building, our library, our police station. As you'll see soon, the chief will explain some of the things that he has incorporated into the new building, which is really still a new building. It's not even a year old yet, but soon to be. This picture at Peter Noyes is the back door. This is, I call it the recess door, and this is where the kids come in and out play. On the left-hand side up top, you can see the camera, which you'll see at many, many of the schools now as you drive by. And on the right-hand side on the door jamb is a control which allows access to buildings for the people that have the credentials to get in. We can control who's allowed in the building and when they're allowed in the building. That's staff, visitors, contractors, anytime we have that control. It's just another further example of trying to secure our buildings. We live in a different world now than we used to. When we built our buildings, fortunately or unfortunately, I would say fortunately, we didn't need these systems. We need to make sure we have them now. So this is a continuation of a project that started several years ago, really to just keep improving our buildings and making them safe. Now, this is a very lengthy slide that Chief Nix and I debated on whether we should put on. Basically, this is what you have read in your warrant. This is why we're here tonight in a lot of words, but the real simple why are we here tonight? This is our form of government. This is how we make decisions. This is how we allocate our funds, whether it's free cash or capital exclusion. But this is what we do. And I want to thank you all for coming here because, you know, this is really where it happens. This is town meeting. This is when we have the back and forth and the questions. This is when the voters get educated onto these articles. I wish the people that went to the ballot could be here tonight or could make the time or should make the time to be here tonight, because this is your opportunity to really understand the questions, the ballots, the articles, the projects. And we don't have that because we can't get everybody in here. But maybe if they watch on TV, maybe if you tell your neighbors what you saw tonight, maybe in the future when there is a ballot question, they'll understand more, because that's really, you know, that's really important. But I credit you all for being here tonight. I really do. Again, another picture. I love pictures. This is the Curtis School front doors where you may go in when you're going to a show in the auditorium. Again, just an example for those that haven't heard this, which are a couple new people. So you haven't heard this presentation in any form. But even for those who have, you know, these are the things that we have put in place thanks to your support. We do it when we go away. We keep working. We keep working. We didn't get funding because the ballot did not support the $195,000 last May. But that doesn't mean we're going to stop. No way. We definitely appreciate the cost, the impact to the taxpayers. But I think we also appreciate the importance of this project. Chief. I mean, speak up whenever you feel like I missed anything. but I am going to actually.
Like I'm talking through you.
I know. I actually am going to hand it over to the chief a little bit, because there's a whole other aspect to this work that I've learned to appreciate by being involved with the construction of the new police station and actually working closely with the chief. About how their staff, how the first responders can use these tools to do their job better.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly, slash my twin. So safety is, obviously, as you heard, my passion. And this article tonight is but one portion of the safety that I really think about all the time. Last week, we just did a very successful training on the logistics of training called ALICE, that we're training our kids, we're training our staff, all sorts of different dynamics that I think is very important. This is one aspect, and I heard some comments earlier about that we may be disrespecting the process. Well, I would disagree with that respectfully, and one of the reasons why we reduced the amount is because we did fail. So we came back and tried to say, okay, it's very important to us. We're not going to go away, like Jim said. We're going to continue to try to make things as safe as we can for the residents, for our parents, for our staff, and especially for our students. Unfortunately, it's a world we live in that we can need to consider these things. But when we started this project, particularly for the police station, we thought of a bigger picture. So what you're seeing here is a monitor that's actually at my dispatch center that allows my dispatchers to pull up cameras live if there was something happening. So I'll give you a different view where you kind of see a broader view of my two dispatch entities. Cameras is great. Isn't it so powerful? Hey, you get a call for 911 that there's an incident in the parking lot. I can give my patrolmen and sergeants and lieutenants live information as you're going. How powerful is that? With the access control that Jim mentioned, we used to have to feed through keys. So if we're trying to get in quick, not just for the worst catastrophe, but just a medical situation, I got to feed through the keys to get in. You know what? All I got to do is swipe my card, and actually, because we enjoy hanging out later at night, we go and we test out these doors. So the other night he drove away while I'm sitting at my desk, and he's like, okay, I'm here, and I released the door for him. He's like, wow, that worked. Well, that's the whole premise. We test it. We make sure we're continually reassessing. But I was able to release a door so he could get in. And again, what if somebody's having a medical emergency in so quickly? Plus, there's accountability. If I'm swiping in or if I'm releasing a door, I know who's going in versus if a key's out there and it gets lost, we then have no accountability.
Excuse me for a minute, Chief.
Yes.
Mr. Kelly's eloquent speech-making has burned through all of your time.
That seems to be the thing tonight for me, huh?
Any objection to giving the Chief a couple more minutes? Any objection? Okay, go ahead.
So thank you. I'll make it real quick. Realistically, like I said, we're going on the safety of residents, the safety of our staff, but one thing that's very important to me is the safety of our students. All right, so this is a combination town / school thing for everybody. And again, my common thread, I guess, is safety. I encourage people to talk, reach out. When we're not having only 5 minutes to talk about this, I would rather explain it time and time again, have you come in. I'll give you a tour of the station to show you what we can do. I'll pop a door for you. You got to be escorted, but I'll pop a door for you to show how we can do it. But I really appreciate the support for trying to continue this safety process going. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Finance Committee, Jose Garcia, May Team.
The Finance Committee recommended approval of this article in May, part of an ongoing program to maintain stricter controls on access to town schools and public buildings, to do all we can to ensure that these buildings and those within them are kept safe from harm. As stated earlier, we believe the use of free cash for this purpose is appropriate. The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 3.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen, Bob Hardy.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Okay. Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, Mr. Howery.
The CIAC supports this article.
Thank you. Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 3? Questions or comments regarding Article 3? Please raise your card. This gentleman right here.
Michael Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane.
Please stand up if you can.
Sure.
Name and address.
Michael Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. Can you be a little more specific about what the $95,000 are going towards? How many cameras, at what locations, how many additional doors are going to be controlled?
So what we did when I was talking about going out and checking out buildings is we're trying to, we're obviously not going to be able to do as much as we would have had we gotten the money last spring. We don't have specific numbers. What we're looking for is the flexibility to go identify areas that need to be addressed. For instance, we only put so many access control points in schools. And as we went through, when we originally planned it, we planned three per school. But when we started our first school, we realized that we needed five. So that took away from others as we went through the process. So it's kind of a multi-tiered approach for what we use for access control. It's what the staff uses to get just the regular logistics. It's what the custodial staff might use. But then it's from my perspective of how I need to get into a building quickly and from multiple angles. So what we've done is gone around and identified different areas of camera coverage as well as the access control to add those. Is it going to be totally complete? No. Do I have the exact numbers? No. I would be happy to discuss, not necessarily in this setting exactly what we're trying to cut, but we're trying to firm up the coverage of access control as well as the cameras. One other things we're going to do is access control is expensive for each door, so we don't want to put it on every door. But one of the things that we were going to do is put door ajar. So that bad thing of propping open the door that then breaches our security, at least it would send an alarm. We won't be able to do that this time, but we'll be coming back with future opportunities, hopefully.
Okay. Go
ahead. I just want to add what we've done so far is we've really put sort of the hardware, the infrastructure, in some of our buildings, the Flynn Building, police station, library, and the schools. So when we add... If we add some access at some doors, or we have to add a camera because we have a spot which isn't covered, it's not as substantial as starting with a new system. Some of the systems that we have to put, I think, just wait on a little bit, but we're going to assess is, for instance, the DPW building, the library, the Fairbanks is a building that we really, really want to get some safety measures installed. So we're going to assess those as we move forward.
Okay. Questions? Other questions on Article right here, Mr. Hollicker? Article 3, Mr. Hollicker.
Is it? Yes. Thomas Hollicker, 623 Concord Road.
Just give that a minute. Okay, try it again.
I'm curious to know how long camera data are retained and who has access to that data.
Chief?
So camera data at our station is around the 70-day mark right now as far as the retention of that. As far as station, that's strictly us. Each school has its own autonomy. So in the K-8 and Lincoln Sudbury, they set theirs. I believe that theirs is around the 30, 45-day mark. One of the things that we wanted to do with the 195 is maybe make that a little bit longer. But each school has the autonomy to provide access or no access to it, whether it's to us or their staff.
Right here.
Glenn Merrill Skoloff, Allen Place. I support this conceptually. I think anything that can be done to take advantage of technology to make our public buildings and schools safer, I'm in favor of. I have some questions about the process. I think it would be easier as a taxpayer for me to approve these sums if there was a comprehensive plan. It seems that there wasn't a real plan for the $195,000. There wasn't a real plan for the $95,000. Not to say that it isn't necessary, but I think it might be easier to get by the voting public if there was a plan and we have this much money, we're going to implement these parts of the plan, et cetera, et cetera. It would make me more comfortable, and I wonder if you gentlemen can address that, and maybe someone else can further this discussion on whether that would be a good idea to get this passed, maybe as a budget number.
So we did kind of do the specifics a year ago last May, the first time we came forward, and identifying three per school, and we found that didn't work, because then you find the logistics and you need to have the flexibility to adjust. I fully understand what you're saying, and when we started this process, we said, hey, do we come forward and we ask for $1 million or $1.5 million with a full comprehensive plan? But we felt that was disrespectful of the taxpayers and what we were going to go, so we felt, the increment approach. Not to mention, as technology improves, take advantage of that. I mean, we're already part of the, what we're doing is updating the 1998, is it, cameras at the library. So it's a perpetual thing. I understand that concrete would be great, and I would love to kind of go over, and I would meet with anybody as far as that, but I also want the flexibility. It's kind of like, I think that Ms. Gussel might use it, like the sidewalks, right? It's just kind of a thing. We want to put sidewalks in and address what are our greatest needs at the time and what are our holes that we have to fill, if that kind of answers your question.
Thanks, Chief. Questions? Article 3. This gentleman right here.
Craig Gruber, Goodmans Hill Road. I'm a professor of Homeland Security, and I've never heard of a budget request to go acquire security systems without a plan as to where that money will be spent and what it will be spent for, other than to say, I'd like $95,000 to figure out what we'd like to spend security on so that we can then get the security systems. I think, although I laud the idea, and as someone who's life is centered around security, is extraordinarily important. I think that there hasn't been the appropriate definitive planning process to really make this an effective, thoughtful, and deliberate approach to providing security to the town.
Thank you, sir. Questions? This right here by the pole.
Thank you. My name is Jennifer Ungaro, and I live at 430 Dutton Road. I'm a parent of two school-age children, and their security concerns me. But what also concerns me is their privacy. And yes, they're in a public place, and they only have a certain expectation of privacy, but school is their home away from home. And I am uncomfortable with continual comprehensive surveillance in their home away from home. I think it impinges on their expectation of not living in a state of perceived siege, even if dangers exist. I don't understand how that outweighs their sense of their well-being, their peace of mind, that seeing the doors locked reminds them that bad things can happen, but it also makes them fear. And I wonder if that fear is always warranted, if that expense is always put in the place where they're most at danger, as opposed to maybe the roads that don't have a sidewalk next to their house. So I'm just curious whether this is being spent in the right place if you're looking for security, considering what the roads are and considering that there's only so much that can be really be done before you have diminishing returns on, I guess, the citizenry and our children and how they just expect to be surveyed. I just want you all to consider that there are trade-offs to that as well. With the perceived increase in security, there's also a sacrifice of that that sense of being left alone by the state. And I don't really want my children's activities being logged for 30 to 45 days into the future, because who knows where it stops. That's all.
Thank you, ma'am. Any other questions or comments regarding Article 3? Right here.
Mara Houston, Peckham Road. I also agree with security. I also agree with your comment about the surveillance of the children and everybody around. Sandy Hook was a horrible tragedy. They had locks on doors. The guy went in through the window. So, yes, locks on doors is helpful, and I'm dealing with it when I go to visit my kid's school. But I don't know whether this is going to make a difference necessarily beyond what we currently have, because Sandy Hook was not caused by the security. Sandy Hook was caused by gun violence issues.
Okay, I think we've got a pretty fair indication of the various points of view on this article. Is there anyone else that has a burning desire to comment on Article 3? Right here.
Bill Chanel at 37 Jarman Road. I did just want to ask with respect to the cameras whether whatever number of cameras got put in, whether for this $95,000, would they all be connected to the police station so that in real time you can do things, or is that a later phase, and would these films just be going into a closet somewhere?
So they are already currently connected to the station. As far as the monitoring, we don't just go, hey, let's watch people on the playground. It's really, if we have an incident, we get a 911 call, they're able to pull it up. So we actually have policies in place that we've worked on with the schools to ensure that it's not just for fun of the dispatchers to watch it. That. But they are currently...
Yeah. My question was actually aimed at that.
They are connected.
Wait a minute. One at a time. Are you done?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Please continue. You guys are talking over each other, and you can't. Only one person can talk at a time. Please continue.
Okay. I was asking not so much for the privacy thing, but to make sure that in this one purchase, which is purchased, would be available in the event of an incident for you to hook right into.
It's already there. So as Mr. Kelly indicated,
awesome.
We had it already. Yep.
Are we ready for a vote? Anybody else want to be heard? Okay, one more.
Just one more technical question, too. On the access lights...
Name and address again, please.
27 Middle Road, Mike Goulet. On the access swipes, are those monitored? In other words, if someone tries to swipe something in the middle of the night, are they alerted, is the police station alerted at the dispatch center?
Yes, we can establish certain parameters. We don't monitor it all day long, per se, but if you know that you're closing at 10 o'clock at night, you're open up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and if there's somebody going into that, yes, it can send notification via email to multiple people that has been breached, yes.
Does that answer your question, Mr. Roulette? Okay. All right. Are we ready for a vote? Okay. The quantum of vote required to pass this article is a majority. All those in favor of passing the motion under Article 3, please raise your cards. All those opposed. Give me that one more time. All those in favor. All those opposed. It passes by well more than majority. Article 4. Yes, sir. Please stand. Please stand. I didn't give my usual procedural spiel before the meeting tonight because we have just a few articles and hopefully we'll be able to get this done in a night. What I usually say is this. Please don't call for a quantum vote count unless you are absolutely certain that I am mistaken. And what I've done in the past is that if someone wants to challenge the vote, in order to do that, you need to have seven other voters who agree with you to challenge it. But I would then have you come up here, and we would do the vote again, and you could see what I see. And then you can reconsider as to whether or not you want to pursue your motion for a vote count. So do you want to do that? Do you want to do that? Town Council again on that point. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. I thought you were asking for a count of the vote. It's not two-thirds, it's a majority. I know. Hang on. Town Council will address that.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Barbara St. Andre from KP Law, Town Council. So again, when the warrant was published, it was not clear whether we were going to be borrowing funds for this. If we borrow funds, it's a two-thirds vote. So what it says in the warrant is two-thirds vote if borrowed. But we're not borrowing. We're taking it from free cash. Free cash is a majority vote. So it's a majority vote.
Okay. Now, I'm sorry if I misunderstood your original point of order. Does that change
whether or not you want to pursue a count of the vote, or are you satisfied that a majority was had? Thank you, sir. Article 4. Security system upgrade for Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. Motion by Elena Clifches, LS School Committee Chair. I'm sorry if I butchered your name. Pardon me.
Yeah, it's Elena Clifches. Okay. So move to transfer from free cash the sum of $128,235 for the purposes stated in the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Presentation by Ms. Clefus. Oh, I'm sorry. Presentation by Superintendent Wong.
Thank you. As Chief Nix and Mr. Kelly spoke to a broader security system upgrade for town and school buildings, this one is just for the high school, and it just focuses on the security cameras. When Lincoln Sudbury opened in 2004, it opened with 20 cameras. Three cameras were added later to focus on the metal lab, the wood shop, and outside the locker rooms. The 20 cameras that came with the opening of the school were targeted at exterior doors. This request is to replace all of those cameras, but also to add additional cameras. In the time since the school opened in 2004, we've had experience in the building that would warrant additional cameras for personal safety and for also protection of property. Those additional cameras would cover a 360 view of the campus. There are cameras now on the roof of the building, but they are only fixed in certain directions, so it never gives you a 360. So the new cameras would give us 180 one way, 180 the other way, but would achieve a 360-degree view of the campus at all times. It would also give us camera under the solar canopy for view of the parking lot, the student parking lot. It would also give us monitoring over the additional exterior doors not currently monitored. Those are the doors at the back of the auditorium, by the maintenance drop-off area, by the fitness center, and actually outside the gymnasium doors. So those exterior doors are not currently monitored. We would also add interior cameras under three stairwells in the building. We would add cameras to give us surveillance of the entrance to the lower level of the auditorium and the upper. We would also add a camera that would give us a view on the musical instrument storage. So what we would be able to do is monitor better all the equipment-intensive areas of the building. We would be able to now monitor the exterior door around the whole building, and very importantly, giving us a 360-degree view of the campus, and then under the solar canopy so we could have a view of the parking lot. Again, this is based on our specific experience over the last 12 years of being in the school, and it is for protecting personal safety as well as safety against theft. The estimated total project cost is $150,000. As Chairwoman Klepkes recited, $128,000 approximately would be the Sudbury portion. The remainder would be for Lincoln. Just to anticipate some other questions, our current cameras can only hold a week of memory. And they also, right now, the resolution is very poor. So we are looking forward to the upgrade for improved resolution, but we would have the capacity to hold memory for up to 30 days. And that is important to us because at times, sometimes people think they've misplaced something and it takes them a little longer to figure out that actually it's missing entirely. Also, in terms of personal safety, sometimes it takes a while for someone to step forward and speak about something that might have happened. And so a week has been too short for us, and 30 days would give us more sufficient margin in terms of, again, protecting personal safety and protection against theft.
Are you done?
Yeah.
Terrific. Finance Committee, Jose Garcia-Metin for report.
The Finance Committee reaffirms our May town meeting recommendation of approval of this article, and as stated earlier, approves the use of free cash to fund this article. Updating and expanding the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School security system will serve to both protect the facility from theft and vandalism, as well as provide the students and faculty with a more widely monitored environment meant to contribute to their safety. The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of Article 4.
Thank you. Board of Selectmen, Chuck Woodard.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article. Thank you.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, Mr. Howery.
The CIAC supports this article.
Okay, discussion. Who wants to be heard on the motion under Article 4? Just a second. Anybody? Right here. Right here.
Susan Bistany, 21 Old Meadow Road. I just have a question. Does the town of Lincoln participate in the expense of this project?
Yes, and so the total project estimated cost is $150,000. The Sudbury portion is estimated to be $128,000, and the remainder would be for Lincoln.
Thank you.
Yes.
Other questions regarding Article 4? Just hold on. I'm trying to get some other people that haven't spoken. Anybody who hasn't spoken regarding Article? Right here.
Art Gutch, 64 Silver Hill Road. Just a quick question. On the doors in the high school, I know there's a lot of open doors. Is there a plan to do anything with the doors, or is that, or is there not?
There has been a review of securing doors, and it's quite an expense. And also, there's some thought that if we were to invest in that, we're not sure that we would achieve success. The school is designed to be accessible from all different directions. It can be accessed from the fields, from the parking lots, from the front of the building, and so even if we secured the doors, we think there would be a high prevalence of doors being jarred, held open, or when people needed to go in and out. So it is something that we've considered. It is not in our plan. It's not like a next step plan that I've been bringing forth to you. Right now, this is a very specific request for areas that we've experienced that could really use better monitoring.
Does that answer your question? Okay. Just a minute. Anybody that hasn't spoken tonight? I see you waving your card. Just a minute. Right all the way in the back.
Dan Martin, 86 Brookdale Road. How many cameras total are we purchasing?
So we have 23 cameras we would replace, and we would add 20 cameras.
So that works out to about, what, $3,500 each?
We are also replacing the head system that runs the cameras as well.
Okay.
Mr. Roulette. Right here. Gentlemen, thank you.
Michael Lloyd, 27 Middle Road. Are these cameras networked to the police station?
It's interesting that you should ask that, because we do have software on our monitoring system that our current cameras are incompatible with because of the age. The new cameras would be compatible with that system, and so we could network with the police department on an as-need basis. When we do record right now, we do share that information with the police department when it's possible that a crime has been committed. So that's something that we do right now anyway.
Okay. Can we get that mic and bring it to this gentleman right here, please?
Mitchell Visney, 21 Old Meadow Road. You said that some certain cameras only focus on certain areas. Have you given any thought to using remote control cameras you can purchase units that will take that one camera you have and sweep automatically different areas, cover a whole bunch of areas. And also, you mentioned that resolution was poor. Seems to me that the cameras you originally purchased probably has decent resolution. Is it because that the cameras aren't focused properly that the resolution is poor?
Do you want to try that?
I can, yes.
Okay.
So we do have two cameras on the roof of the school now. The way they work, they only give us not quite a 180, but something less than that. So they only show the area that we are pointing them to. In the upgrade, we would still have only two cameras on the roof, but the technology has improved such that each one would give us a 180. So two cameras for two cameras, but the upgrade would give us the 360 altogether. With respect to the resolution, I've seen it, and so if it were on you, we would get a general sense of your height and your breadth, but we would not actually be able to discern your identity. And so the resolution is just, if you think about digital cameras that are out, how much they've improved every few years. Remember, these are cameras from 2004. The upgrade cameras also will give us better resolution even when it's dark. And honestly, that would be a great help. And so at best, our cameras give us some sense when there's a lot of light. In the dark, they're not very helpful at all.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Can you take that microphone and bring it over to this gentleman right here, please?
Bob Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. I'm not against the cameras. My son goes to the high school. What I'm concerned about is there was a horrific tragedy at the high school, a murder, 7, 8, 9 years ago. And at that time, both police chiefs had, about a 20-point mission to improve the security at the school. It included locks on the doors and cameras and everything else. And at that time, obviously the residents were requesting security. At the time, the administration was absolutely against cameras and security. So I'd like to know what specific reasons why now, you're asking, when not after a murder. Is it because there's a lot of crime? Is there a lot of assaults at the school? Why now and not back then?
I can't speak specifically to what administration said or did not say at that time, but these are cameras that were in existence in the building when the school opened. We have worked with Chief Nix and Chief Kennedy of Lincoln, and actually this proposal for security cameras was reviewed with them and endorsed by both of them. As I said, in our experience over the last decade, 12 years in the school, there have been specific incidents of theft of property. We have a whole portion of the building that is not monitored by cameras, exterior doors, and it's also an area not well captured by the roof cameras. So we have had that experience over the last few years. And occasionally there have been concerns around personal safety on campus. But those are all things that have happened. What you speak to was a terrible tragedy, but it happened in the bathroom. That is not a place that we're looking to install a camera. That's not a place that we... It's in areas where you expect personal privacy. It's not an area we would put a camera. So these cameras would are really around protection against theft and also other general personal safety in the other areas of the building and on campus.
Thank you, Superintendent Wong. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 4? Anyone else wish to be heard? Right here.
Jennifer Angaro, 430 Dutton Road again.
I'm sorry, is it Ms. Angaro?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Has the loss to property and the expenses of vandalism, has it been $100,000, would you say, in cost?
So some of the theft we include are actually student projects. I'm not sure what sort of value that you would place on that, but that those are some of the things that go out through the metal lab and may have gone out those other exits. Some of the equipment that we've lost, I don't know, probably could be close to that amount that we've lost out of some of the wood shop area. But the other thing that's changed here at Lincoln Sudbury is that more recently, because we've upgraded the network infrastructure, we have more technology equipment that we're making use of. And so it really makes best sense to protect our assets by making sure that all exterior doors are now monitored.
I was speaking to the damage to property. Has Lincoln Sudbury had problems with vandalism to really necessitate that?
No, I think I said that really this is about protection against theft of property.
Okay, so not vandalism.
Not so much vandalism. So again, the cameras are oriented toward the fitness center, the metal lab, the wood shop. And metal lab includes our jewelry making courses. So there, and also musical instruments. So our intensive equipment areas of the school.
Okay, so your concern is
you've asked several questions.
The personal property?
Excuse me. Anyone else wish to be heard? Okay, do you have another question? Ms. Angaro?
I guess I'm asking about what is the cost to property versus the cost to safety, which nobody seems to be able to give me a dollar amount on the cost of that, you know, and the value you're getting from spending on security.
Okay, so Superintendent, do you understand
the division line?
Wait a minute.
Are you asking how much of this is for personal safety versus theft of property?
Right, like how much, in your mind, how much is that weighted?
I think they're both pretty critical, but personal safety, I don't know how you would quantify that. So I would say both are really important, but if I had to choose one or the other, then I would say personal safety is utmost.
Okay, anyone else wish to be heard on Article 4? I see no one. Okay. Notwithstanding the fact that it says in your warrant that a two-thirds vote is required if borrowed, the actual quantum required to pass this motion is a majority. Am I correct on that, Town Council? Okay, majority vote is required. All those in favor of passing the motion under Article 4, please raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Okay, before we go on to Article 5, thanks. There's a whole lot of gentlemen, people standing over here. The fire chief breaks out in hives if people aren't sitting appropriately because it blocks the exit. So please find a seat. There's plenty of seats right down here in the middle. Also, please note that I can't see you, so I won't count your vote if you remain standing. There's also a lot of seats right down here in front. All right. I'm also seeing folks in the balcony. The balcony's not open. I can't count your vote if you're up there. Sorry. There's plenty of seats right down in front. Okay? Okay. On to Article 5, Artificial Turf Field Replacement, Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. Motion by Elena Cleffis. Lincoln Sudbury
Klafkas. Sorry. Klafkas. Lincoln Sudbury, School Committee Chair.
Thank you. Move to approve the amendment to the Lincoln Sudbury Regional School District fiscal year 2017 budget for the purposes as stated in the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. Presentation by Superintendent Wong.
So I am here to talk to you about the replacement of the lower turf fields that are located here at Lincoln Sudbury. This is a picture of the fields. If you parked in the larger parking lot and you looked over the hill, that's where the fields are. There are two fields here that are encased by the fencing. These fields came online in 2004 with the opening of the school. They've had 22 seasons of use. This is the 23rd and 24th season. They are used in the fall and the spring, not in the winter. The typical life expectancy of a turf field is 10 years, and we are currently in the 12th year. The users of the field are our scholastic teams, Lincoln Sudbury Girls and Boys Soccer, Lincoln Sudbury Girls and Boys Lacrosse, and also when we have a hard winter, before the winter melts on the other fields, we cram everybody else onto that till the other fields, the natural fields, are dry enough for use. We also have Ellis Field Hockey that is on there. We also have a whole cadre of town youth sports that are listed up there. If I step back, it sounds like it's okay. Sudbury Youth Football, Sudbury Youth Soccer, Lincoln Youth Soccer, Ellis Boys Youth Lacrosse, Sudbury Girls Youth and Lacrosse, and those are scheduled in conjunction with Park and Rec. We also have private users, and those are listed for you as well. While they are private users, many residents of town participate in those, and they're asterisked because those are the only users that are currently assessed a fee. This is something that, as we move forward, we will look at broadening the fee structure or our fee system, which would accommodate review the fee structure, but also including town youth sports. But as I show you this graph, this is actual documented use in the last year, 1,716 hours of use. The blue bars are LS Scholastic teams. Red are youth sports, town youth sports, and yellow are the private users. When you add the red and the yellow, that's around 900 hours. When you look at LS Scholastics, we are about 800 hours. And so I feel that in many ways, this is the most highly used town asset, town capital asset used by the youth of the town other than the school buildings. And again, this is exact documented use in the last year. While we are approaching our 12th year of use, what happens over time is the field will deteriorate. And so we now have uneven playing surfaces, partly because we had to repair certain areas. High-use areas where the goal creases are, so two fields, four goal creases, and the face-off circles. If you've ever seen a lacrosse game played, you know how they start at the face-off circle. High-use area on that face-off circle. In the last spring, we had to replace one face-off circle and one goal crease. And so we're trying to be very minimal in the replacement because when you see the pictures, when we replace those areas, it creates an uneven surface. The other uneven surface is where the painted lines are. We're not truly painted lines. They're chemically treated to look like lines to direct the line of play. They are deteriorating at a different rate than the regular of the turf field, and so we have differentiated height. When you have differentiated height on the field, it causes a tripping hazard. The other thing that happens with the turf field as it ages is it loses its cushioning and can lead to injuries through high use. And then the other deterioration is something that forms called cleat clinch. Cleat clinch means when the kids are running on the field, it holds on just a fraction longer than they would expect. So as they when they plant and turn and twist,
it can hold it just a little bit, and that can also cause injury. So right now, the field is of a state that really, they're still using it at a very high level, but it's really at a point where you can lead to increased incurrence of injury. This is a picture of the spring repair of the Gold Crease, and you can see when they repair, they have to put in new material, and it's that much higher than the old turf. This is another view where you can see the differentiation in height, and that can cause a lip that one can trip over. It's another view of the differentiated height when you do the repair. This is the face-off circle, so you can also see where the delineation is, and then the difference in height when you do the repair. Again, we really tried to do minimal repair, only did one face-off circle and one gold crease. If we don't repair, if we don't replace this summer, we're likely going to have to do the other face-off circle and the other three gold creases. This shows how the treated lines are deteriorating at a different level, so they are lower than the rest of the turf. I've been asked the question of cost analysis between natural and synthetic. So this is the analysis for the cost to maintain a natural field is based on the Gale Associates study that was done in 1999 that happened before you actually put in the synthetic turf with the school opening. Based on that amount for maintenance costs, I carried it forward 2% annually, so I think a conservative number. Most of the maintenance costs is really labor to mow and water and tend to the field. Resodding over a 10-year period, you're likely to have to resod at least twice. And then the watering, hundreds of thousands of gallons of water that you would have to do, and then the lines have to be repainted. What we did for this model is that for the natural field we have on campus, we clocked exactly 350 hours of use this last year. Now remember, last year was a mild winter. So 350 hours is the highest you should probably expect that we would be able to use that natural field. And then the 1,716 hours on the field turf is for comparison on the other side.
Superintendent?
Yes?
Time's up. How much more time do you need?
I think I actually have, in fairness, 4 more minutes.
Any objection to giving the superintendent 3 more minutes to speak? Okay.
Okay.
How about 3?
Okay.
Thanks.
I'll work at that. So we have one natural field, and so 350 hours, I doubled it. So we have two natural fields compared to the field turf. I also want to point out that we're looking at 150,000 square feet of new field replacement, and the Gale study was on 90,000. So any number I use for the natural turf is conservative, meaning it's probably low. We did quote the cost of replacing the synthetic field with a natural field, right? So at $415,000. If you can see in the prior one, even without putting in the cost of replacing the field, it's already much more expensive per hour of use for the natural field. When you replace the current field with a natural field, rebuild it, it's now $128 per hour of use versus $55 an hour of use of the synthetic. I should also point out the difference between natural and synthetic is natural requires pesticides, synthetic does not. There's another practical aspect is we do rent the fields out to private users. Private users are looking for a synthetic field to rent. They are not renting natural field. So the only fees that we could incur would be for a synthetic turf field. So estimated cost to replace would be $840,000 plus engineering cost of $35,000 for an estimate of $875,000. We are proposing to take some monies out of the revolving accounts from gate receipts, athletic user fees, from our rental fees, and Sports Boosters has generously offered $10,000 together to mitigate the costs. The other benefit of having approval this fall is that we could put the project out to bid this winter, which is a much more competitive time to bid. So while this is a total projected cost of $875,000, we're very optimistic if we're able to bid in the winter, it would be a much better price and a lower cost. It would also be beneficial to us because then we could get a better timing for the project to happen this summer. If we bid in the spring, then we are less likely to get an optimal time. So this is the last slide, just summarizing the request that we are looking to replace the lower turf 1 and 2 fields. We have a recommendation specifically for that field. It would be new rubber, crumbed, not recycled, not reused rubber, but new rubber crumbed. And then there would be another natural layer of cork over the top of it, plus the cushioning of the turf.
Okay. Good job. Finance Committee, Jose Garcia-Maitin for a report.
These two fields are 12 years old and are at the end of their useful lives. Delaying their replacement any longer will risk the school and the town's ability to support the events which utilize this town asset. The Finance Committee, by a vote of 7-1, recommends approval of this article to fund the replacement of the fields, mainly funded by the Lincoln Subway Regional High School's Excess and Deficiency Fund, as well as funding from gate receipts and user fees. The Finance Committee plans to look into how fees are collected, utilized, and applied to maintenance and future replacement of these fields.
Board of Selectmen, Mr. Woodard.
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, Mr. Howery.
The CIAC supports this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 5? All the way in the back.
Dave McCormick, 226 Old Lancaster. So one of the slides up there said you were charging 900 hours to, you call them private groups. How much were you charging and where did that money go?
So 900 hours going to youth sports and private users. And so those fees get collected, but also user fees from the students and gate receipts. So those are all going to revolving accounts that go to the maintenance of the fields. So all the fields on campus, we are charged with maintaining them, including the stadium field, all the natural fields. So the monies over the years have been expended to do that, whether replacing fencing. We just replaced the track surfacing this past summer. So that's where all the money goes to. And so right now, out of the reserves that remain, we think we can take $107,000 out of that, plus the $10,000 from boosters.
Okay, that was my next question. But is there a plan to make it sustainable? Is there a plan to pay for 10 to 12 years from now? Thank you.
Yes. So we hope to, after this, is just to be able to be inclusive about how we can amend our fee structure to have it sustainable, and that we are actually optimistic if we could do that and be inclusive and get everyone who would be impacted to be part of that, that we could come up with a fee structure that everyone would feel was fair and understood that where it would go to replace, to have a bigger pool to contribute to a replacement, say, 10 years from now.
Okay. Questions, further questions or comments on Article 5? Just a minute, Mr. Stein. Right over here.
Carolyn Lee, 28 Mossman Road. Does the town of Lincoln contribute to this?
This is coming out of the Lincoln Sudbury revolving accounts, so gate receipts would be whoever comes to watch the games. User fees are from our student athletes. So to the extent that we have Lincoln students or Sudbury students, yes. And then the rental fees really come from the private users. And so I would say predominantly there are Sudbury residents, but I would assume Lincoln residents as well. Other than that, it's coming from the excess and deficiency fund. The excess and deficiency fund is comprised of funds that have been appropriated to Lincoln Sudbury by Sudbury and Lincoln. So in that way, yes. Obviously in a different ratio as all things, all our funding requests are.
Okay, further questions or comments on Article 5? Hold on just a minute. Okay, I'm going to go with Mr. Holliker. Mr. Stein, you're next. You're third.
Thomas Holliker, 623 Concord Road. I'm confused about the funding. If one refers to this slide before us, it looks like there's something in excess of $200,000. Now, is that to be used to defray the $800-some thousand that you're requesting?
Right.
Or is it in, actually in addition to the $800,000?
$100,000 would be coming from the revolving accounts for gate receipts and user fees, another $7,500 from rental fees, and then $10,000 from boosters as a donation. All of those would take, so you take $875 and you minus $117,500.
Okay.
So it helps lower the cost. But I also think that if we're able to put it out to bid this winter, we'll be able to improve on that projected cost.
But shouldn't your request be the $800-some thousand minus these amounts?
Do you understand the question?
That is the funding request, $875,000 minus those sums. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Holliker. Mr. Stein.
I'm back. 7 Thompson Drive, Bob Stein. My son, who goes to the high school, uses the artificial turfs on a regular basis. He's a lacrosse player. There's no question that the fields need to be replaced. But just want to remind the hall that it's October, and in the past, the E&D fund in April and May has been used for shortfalls in their budget, for out-of-district kids, for maintaining teachers, and to spend a majority of this of their excess money, which again was overestimating expenses, underestimating revenue. Basically, they overcharge us on our property taxes. This money to spend now, a majority of it, I'd like an assurance from you, Ms. Wong, that come May at town meeting, you will not ask for an override and threaten to fire teachers because we spent a majority of the money on the fields now. And on a separate note, I did bring it to your attention several years ago that the private users, which make up a good percentage of the use of the fields, they generate tens of thousands of dollars of profit for themselves, for which we lose a substantial amount of money on because the fee that you charge them doesn't even cost the help to pick up the trash, maintain the restrooms for each day that they're there. And years ago, you assured me you'd look into raising the fees. And I'd like to have an assurance today that for the people that make tens of thousands of dollars for profit, who use a good portion of the usage of the fees, can you assure us that you will raise the charges to these private for-profit organizations so we make money on them to defray the cost for the regular people in Sudbury? A lot of the users of for-profit are out-of-towners.
Okay. There was a request for several assurances, Superintendent Wong. Rest assured that you need not give any unless you desire to do so. I interpret Mr. Stein's comments as rhetorical and not necessarily a question posed to you. So you can respond if you like, but it's not necessary if you don't want to. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Next, anybody else want to be heard on this?
May I respond just
yes, certainly.
One?
Because absolutely.
I actually like Mr. Stein, so I'd like to answer at least one. And so I absolutely commit, and we've been talking a lot about it internally, about about reviewing our fee structure. And as I said, I really look forward to being able to do that rather than we just say it's going to be this, but to use an inclusive process, because I really do consider the field as a town asset. It's used by the youth from little kids to older kids, and so even though there are private users, many of our residents are participating in that. And it's actually not a bad thing to be playing on your local field with kids from out of town. I think that's all good. So because there's so many different kinds of users, I think that we would try to talk to open up about what we would do, and so have everyone feel that was fair and good.
Okay. Town Council has asked for a moment to explain the motion. Barbara.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Barbara St. Andrew from KP Law, Town Council. Just because the issue has been raised about the funding, I want to make sure that people are clear. Again, when the warrant was published, you know, we do it based on the information we have at the time, and so the warrant article that you have is to appropriate a certain amount of money for the turf fields. Since then, as the superintendent has explained, other funding sources have been identified. So what's actually before you is simply there's no funding being requested. It's all being paid for from existing funds. What you're being asked to do is to approve a budget amendment, which was sent to the town within the last few days from the LS School Committee, basically saying that they want to increase their budget by $875,000 from existing funds, and the town has 45 days to either approve or disapprove that particular request. So there's no money being appropriated tonight. You're simply approving or disapproving the budget amendment that's been requested by the school committee.
Okay. Thank you, Town Council.
So it's a majority vote. Let me just anticipate.
Okay. I got that. All right. Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 5? Anybody that hasn't spoken yet? Right here. This gentleman right here.
Could you put up the Steve Gabler, 28 Mossman Road? Could you put up the original motion for the article? I'm confused. The warrant article says $875,000, and Superintendent Wong said the $117,000 was subtracted from that.
Yep.
Have we seen the amendment that we're voting on approving?
I think this is what Town Council just spoke to in terms of the motion that's been made is to approve or disapprove a reapportionment of the LS budget. Please correct me if I'm wrong. And that, and there's no appropriation of any funds under this motion. Does that make sense?
I think so.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 5? I'm looking for people that haven't spoken yet. Right here.
Thanks, Mike Donlin, 64 Lincoln Lane. Never spoken before at one of these things before. The only thing I wanted to add into the discussion here is the fact that my son is a senior in Lincoln Sudbury High School. And very much enjoys the experience here. He's a part of the lacrosse program, part of the soccer program. Last spring, he tore his ACL in that field. And that happens. And I will be the first to admit that there's a whole bunch of reasons why that happens, but it's that kind of knee-twisting injury that exactly that Ms. Wong spoke of. And what I can also tell you is that one of his teammates tore his ACL 1 week later. And so these are events that happen. There's no doubt about it in conflict and in contact sports like that here. But you know, all I'd say is just it feels a little suspicious. And my son, again, has been a part of both those programs for the last 4 years, and to my knowledge, there have not been other injuries like that in recent years here. But in terms of kind of looking at the injury angle and forgetting about the finances, which obviously matter a lot here, all I can tell you is it's not a lot of fun taking your son through his six-month surgery and recovery period and all that kind of involves here. So, you know, again, it's not solely certainly because of the field. There's a whole bunch of causes that could be there, but it's, you know, what I can tell you from being a parent sitting on the sidelines is it looks like we are starting to see these kinds of injuries happen. And time will tell, but hopefully it doesn't get worse.
Okay, there was a gentleman in the back that had, just a minute, please. There's a gentleman in the back with his hand up, sir.
Roger Nichols, 220 Old Lancaster Road. Question is, why, if we approve the money in May town meeting, are we precluded from bidding it in October?
Who wants to handle that?
Are you suggesting that we would bid the following fall? And so what we're concerned about is that we already had to do some very discreet immediate repair. We didn't have a choice to do one gold crease and one face-off circle. And you can see that there is no way they can do the repair and keep the surface even. And so I am advocating that we replace this summer, because if we don't replace this coming summer, we're likely going to have to replace more gold creases, if not the remaining three and the remaining face-off circle. And that only increases more of the uneven surface that kids can trip on, but it also will be another year of deteriorating cushioning and also the cleat clinch.
So the question is, are we prohibited from bidding in October if we approve in May? Because that was one of the reasons it was given for approving now, is, oh, if we do it now, we can get it bid now. Well, if you approve in May, can't we bid it in October anyway? Clearly we didn't approve it last May, but if we approve it in May of 2017, why could we not bid it in October of 2017 and fix it for the summer?
Okay. Do you want to?
It would be the next summer.
Just a minute. Who can speak to this question cogently? Mr. Hardy.
I think we could bid next October, but we would have to wait another year, and that would be two more seasons, and it would put more of our athletes at risk for another year.
Okay, there's a point of order. That's Mr. Nichols. There's a point of order?
Yes.
Okay.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. With the motion as displayed up there, I think the next to previous speaker's question wasn't really addressed. The way this is phrased is as though it were a motion in the words of the article, but it's not. And when it says for the purposes as stated in the article does say the purposes, but it says nothing at all about the amendment. The amendment has no antecedent in this case. It says move to approve the amendment. But it's an amendment that none of us have ever seen, and that isn't even cited as in the motion as to where it can be found or where it comes from or when it was submitted or by whom.
So what's your point?
So my point is that an amendment needs to be made to this, and I'm not going to be the one to make it, but an amendment needs to be made to this to specify what the amendment is that it refers to.
All right. Good question. Give me a minute. Okay. After conferring with town council, the response to your point of order is that the motion says that it is moving to approve an amendment to the Lincoln-Sudbury Regional School District fiscal year budget. It's not an amendment to any motion before the hall. It's approval or disapproval of amending the budget. Okay? Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 5? Right back here. I answered your point of order.
With respect, Mr. Moderator, it's not okay. It doesn't say.
Wait a minute. You don't have the floor. Mr. Coe, you don't have the floor. Please give the microphone to the Boy Scout. I'm recognizing this woman right here.
Kate Blake, 546 Peckham Road. I just have a quick question. One of the slides said that it's going to be the clean rubber. Does the current turf use the old rubber from the tires that we've heard about and could potentially cause cancer?
I actually don't know the answer to that. I tried to research it, but I don't have the answer to that. I can tell you what we've explored and what would go in. It would be clean. It would be clean rubber crushed.
Anybody?
And also, like right now, we don't have that additional cork layer on top. So it would have the additional cork layer on top, below the turf surface.
Anybody wish to be heard with a substantive question about Article 5? Just a minute. Anybody else that hasn't spoken? Right here.
Thank you, Brian Kane, 33 Victoria Road. So just as a follow-up to the previous question over there, so for clarity, what is the amendment to the budget? Are we asking to increase it to $875,000?
Yeah. It's considered an amendment to the budget, even though there's no change in appropriation, because we want to access the excess and deficiency funds. So when we presented the budget for this year, we didn't have that part. So that's an amendment to allow us to access it. It won't change the appropriation. It just allows us to access the excess and deficiency funds.
Okay, and then just a quick follow-up. So this is a large sum of money, obviously, and it sounds like most of it already voted on in May. It's been appropriated. But at a higher level, and I know it may go out to bid, but it seems very expensive. So is there a way, when it goes to bid, to make sure the price comes down? Are there other alternatives? Just sort of thinking at a higher level to figure out if we can get the number down. I know some of it, there's that extra $117,500. We're curious to know what else we can do.
It's already a fairly competitive price. When we looked at what's available, it's neither the highest or the middle. It's actually a little shy of the middle, lower.
Okay.
But I was surprised when I looked at the Gale Associates report in 1999. They were projecting a cost of $736,000 for a 90,000 square foot field. This is 150,000 two fields. So surprisingly, to me, it hasn't escalated as much as I thought. So I think it's a good price.
Okay, thank you.
Any other further substantive questions regarding Article 5? Mr. Hardenberg. Right, before Mr. Hardenberg gets the mic, I just want to remind folks that we have two articles left, and we've got about an hour. So please factor that into your decision to speak or the length that you choose to speak. Mr. Hardenberg.
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tipling Rock Road. Could we see the amendment that we are approving?
Do you have a slide that illustrates the budget amendment?
I don't. It would be the $875,000 minus the mitigating numbers, and I don't have the total in my head. And I'd rather not do it in my head right now if someone else could do it. I don't. Oh. Should I just take yours?
Just a minute.
Yeah. I
Since we seem to be bogged down on this procedural issue, let me read you a letter to the Lincoln-Sudbury Regional School District from Stephen Cirillo, who is the district, it's to the Board of Selectmen from Stephen Cirillo, District Treasurer, on the letterhead of Lincoln-Sudbury Regional School District. And the ray line is appropriation of excess and deficiency funds. On October 13, 2016, the Lincoln-Sudbury Regional School Committee voted unanimously to, upon certification of fiscal year 2016 excess and deficiency funds, appropriate up to $757,500 from excess and deficiency for the purpose of replacing two artificial turf fields. The total cost of the project is estimated at $875,000. With $117,500 identified from alternative school funding resources. This action will result in an amendment in the form of an increase to the fiscal year 2017 Lincoln-Sudbury Regional School District approved budget. Under the Code of Mass Regulations 41.05, the treasurer must submit the proposed amendment to the members of the regional district within 7 days of the school committee vote for local appropriating authority approval. That's us. If the town of Sudbury takes no further action after 45 days from the date of the vote, the action of the school committee will be deemed approved. Conversely, the town of Sudbury may confirm approval through town meeting. This action will not change the assessment already established with the town of Sudbury. Town Council, does that accurately reflect the legal issues before us?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I know this is confusing, but I'm hopeful that this explains some of the questions that are running through the hall regarding amendments to the budget. This is not an amendment to the motion. It's not a procedural issue that we need to grapple with. We are just approving or disapproving whether the school can shuffle funds or approve the use of these funds for the purposes stated in the article. Okay. Does anybody have any substantive questions or comments regarding Article 5? I'd like to see people that haven't spoken yet. Mr. Matthews, you're next.
So Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. I just want to, I'm also a member of the school committee. I want to clarify, just to give a little background so that we can put this into context. The excess and deficiency fund was funded because we had some good experiences through, I think, some cooperation with our faculty, through health care cost reductions, and I think just some good strategic financial management. And I credit the administration for that. So that we were able to add a fair amount of money to this excess and deficiency fund. Last May, we also saw a reaction by the town against some capital investment by raising money that would increase your taxes. So the school committee and the administration thought that this would be a way for the school, through its own funds, to take care of an asset that is on its own property. What we are asking the town for, or by this device, is asking the town to approve us to be able to spend money that we already have. It kind of is that simple, and we came across this money not through cutting corners, not through cheating anyone. We came through this through, I think, good financial management, and we'd like to help the town manage this in a way that doesn't raise your taxes and helps us help the town take care of an asset that is used by the entire town.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. I recognize this gentleman all the way in the back in the green shirt.
Hi, Stace Casaria, 524 Concord Road. I walked in here thinking that this was a lot of money, and I was probably going to vote against it. But the father, I forgot his name down there, whose son had that ACL injury, makes me wonder if the town knows about the risk and refuses to act, does it open us to liability from athletes who are injured on the field?
Do you want to field that or not?
It honestly, it has been a concern of ours. Because we are our own district, we bear our own liability, so it is something that we have considered. But which is why we have been advocating for replacement of the field. It really is at a point where I think it will cause increased number of injury. As I said, we have given very discreet repairs. If we don't replace in the summer, it's likely that we'll have to repair other areas and we'll increase the number of uneven surfaces on the field.
There's a motion. Can you stand, give your name and address, and identify your motion, please?
Sorry. Yes. Chris Morley, 321 Old Lancaster Road. I move that I call the question.
Does that receive a second? Okay. In order to call the question, terminate debate and move to a vote requires a majority vote. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your cards. All those opposed, the question's been called. On to the main vote. As town council, So aptly recognized, notwithstanding the fact that it says two-thirds vote required in your warrant. This actually requires a majority vote in order to pass Article 5. All those in favor of passing the motion under Article 5, please raise your cards. All those opposed. That passes nearly unanimously and certainly by well more than a majority. We're on to Article 6. Now, all right, we have some articles to do, so if you're going to leave, please do so quietly. The motion under Article 6 is a special act, grant of additional all-alcoholic beverage licenses not to be drunk on the premises. There's a motion by Brian Mills.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I wanted to move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There's a second. Mr. Mills, are you going to give the presentation?
Actually, no, Mr. Moderator. At this time, I'd like the opportunity for the petitioner and his attorney to give the presentation on this article subject to hall approval.
Okay. You said the petitioner or the petitioner's attorney?
Both.
Okay. All right. Could the petitioner and the petitioner's attorney... Okay, they're here. Just stay there for a second. I have spoken to these both of these gentlemen earlier who asked me for permission as non-residents to address the hall on this article. As you know, under our bylaws, that needs to be only with the approval of the hall. So there are two gentlemen who have asked for this privilege. Anthony Speranzella is the owner of the business, which is seeking the relief. He is a South Borough resident. He owns and operates six Sperry locations in Metro West, one of which is the subject of this article. He's been in the industry over 30 years. His attorney is Mr. Bill Bruin, Jr. He is a graduate of Boston College Law School, which is pretty good. he's been practicing law in the Commonwealth since 1980, and he currently maintains an office in Marlborough. So let's take this one at a time. Is there a motion to allow Mr. Speranzella to address the hall? Is there a second? All those in favor of allowing Mr. Speranzella to address the hall tonight, all those opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Now, with respect to Mr. Attorney Bruin, is there a motion to allow him to address the hall as well? There is. Is there a second? Okay. All those in favor of allowing Mr. Bruin to address the hall, please raise your cards. All those opposed? Okay, both gentlemen are authorized to address the hall. You have 5 minutes. You can use it any way you like.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening, members of the town meeting. My name is Attorney William F. Bruin, Jr. I have offices in Marlborough, Massachusetts. To my right is Anthony Speranzella. He is the president of Eastbrook, Inc., the current holder of a beer and wine license at 435 Boston Post Road. And he operates it under the name Sperry's Fine Wine and Brew. Business has been open in Sudbury since May of 2016 at the Sudbury Crossing. If approved, this liquor store, if approved, would be the only full-service liquor store on the eastbound side of Route 20 in Southborough. Another known fact is, would be the only fully service liquor store from the Marlborough border all the way to the Waltham border next to Weston. Mr. Speranzella, as many of you know, has diligently designed the interiors of the store with an impressive display of wines and also a display of different types of beer. The store has attracted many satisfied customers, and many of these customers have inquired and asked why the store does not carry liquors and cordials and spirits. They desire the convenience of one-stop shopping, and they also would like to drive into the Sudbury crossings, not have to cross over and go in a different direction to get to another store to purchase the additional liquors that they may desire. The home rule petition is specific to this type of need. Presently, the ABCC rules in, as set forth in Chapter 138 of the Massachusetts General Laws, allows four liquor licenses, all alcoholic licenses in Sudbury. That is based on a formula, which is one license for each 5,000 of residents, plus an additional license for a fraction over the 5,000 total. Presently, as I said, Southborough has four full-service, Sudbury has four full-service liquor license. The approval with the town meeting is just one step in the process. If approved by this evening, then it needs to be sent into the state legislature as a home rule petition. That is taken up by the legislature in each of the House of Representatives and the state Senate. Once approved by both houses, it is then signed by the governor. The process then reverts back to the town of Sudbury to the Board of Selectmen. The Board of Selectmen then would have the traditional license approval process. There'd be advertising, there'd be a hearing, and then they would vote on approving the full license. So the town of Sudbury still has full control over this additional license. As you can read from the article, it's specific to that location. That is a historic requirement of these type of home rule petitions with the state legislature. And finally, the existing beer and wine license would be turned back to the town, providing an opportunity for additional commerce. Mr. Speranzella is very involved in the town of Sudbury, as he is with his other towns where he has practices. He sponsors the Lincoln Sudbury Warrior Football, the Hope Sudbury Telethon and Auction, and other different organizational, and in the future, probably other different sports organizations in Southborough. Sudbury, excuse me. That's where Tony's from, obviously. Town police would monitor the new license, and it just does not add any additional cost to the town of Sudbury. It would just be the same monitoring that occurs with the beer and wine. There's a slight increase, probably around $750, in the amount of yearly revenue that the town would take in from this full license. So there's some benefit there. This is something I want to make clear that's done quite frequently in the state legislature. Over the past 3 years, probably over 30 towns have made this request. An example of those towns would be Northborough, Southborough, Westborough, Wellesley, Needham, Bedford, and town of Dedham, and also the town of Concord. So something that towns have seen as a need to improve their commerce, to provide additional business opportunities for their town, and again, this would all occur in the Route 20 district of the town, which is obviously the main commerce area of Sudbury. I'd like Mr. Speranzella to briefly speak about his experience.
Hi, my name is Tony Speranzella. I've been married for 29 years, same lady, and I have four children, 26, 25, 20, and 19. I've been in the industry for like 29 years, 30 years. Our goal here is to, the customers are looking for a little, convenience and all that stuff at the store, so we kind of want to help everybody out, be in the community for a while, which we do in our other towns. And I just want to make sure that everybody knows that that's our goal, is to be here, help the community, and be part of this. And I love Sudbury. I'm just going to get that straight. But that's what we plan on doing here, and we're good partners in the community. We're good neighbors. We've been doing this for a while, and we're not here to hurt anybody or do anything to anybody. We just want to improve my business, help out and the community, and do what we can do for everybody. So we're not bad guys. We just want to try to extend what we do. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Kevin, the manager, he'd like to say something, please.
You're actually out of time. Are you a resident? Okay. Come on up. What's your name? Okay.
Good evening, and thank you all.
Name and address, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Kevin Gelsna. I live at 520 Concord Road. Good evening, and thank you all for coming to town meeting. I have lived in Sudbury my whole life and was educated through the Sudbury school system, and I am a graduate of Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. I attended and graduated from Boston College. While attending BC, I worked at a well-known institution here in Sudbury, McKinnon's Liquors. I learned from the trade from the masters, John and Mike McKinnon. It was through them that I was able to achieve and learn about working in the retail industry. I've been working in the industry since 1996. My family has lived in town for 40 years. My mom has been involved in many activities in town. She normally would be out in the lobby signing you in, but as you came into town meeting. She's also worked with campaigns and folks who have run for local office. Many are sitting on the stage. I am presently the manager of Sperry's Fine Wine Brewings here in Sudbury. Before that, I was the manager at the store in Whalen. Working with Tony Speranzola is fantastic. He runs a very efficient company, and he's very good to his employees. Quite a few patrons have come into the store and have asked for products that we don't carry because we don't have the full license to do so. But with your vote of yes on this article, we would be able to do so. I would ask that you vote in favor of this article, and please stop by the store and say hello. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Gilson. And Finance Committee for a report, please.
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Board of Selectmen, Susan Giuliano.
The Board of Selectmen recommends approval of this article with 4 in support and 1 abstention.
Okay. We're on to discussion. I noted earlier that several non-resident folks have contacted me today and asked to also be able to address the hall. And I made them sit in the back because that's our practice. But if you are a non-resident, you have a desire to speak and to be approved by the hall to do so, please come down in front so that I make sure that I get you before the hall. And there's plenty of seats in the front. You can just take those while we proceed. Okay, on to the discussion. Who would like to be heard on Article 6? Gentleman right here in the red shirt, I'm sorry, maroon shirt.
Yeah, George Connor, 189 Morse Road. Can someone explain who currently holds the 4 existing licenses?
Sure.
Just a minute. Chief, do you know that?
I have it.
Okay.
Manager. So the current licenses for all alcohol are held by Duck Soup, Danny's, Stony Brook, and Sudbury Wines and Spirits.
Does that answer your question, Mr. Chairman?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Who else wants to be heard on Article 6? Oh, right here. Sorry. Ms. Detlef. You can come up, or you can talk from there if you like. Whatever you.
I have a presentation.
Oh, okay. Come on up. It's Janie Detlef. Janie Detlef, D-E-T-L-E-R. Start with your name and address, okay?
So pretty. I'm Janie Drettler, 286 Goodmans Hill Road. I'm the president and CEO of Drettler Household. I have 2 children who are 4 and 8 and have lived in Sudbury since 2004. I've driven through and shopped in Sudbury for 30 years. I care deeply about the future of the town and would like to see Sudbury take a proactive, thoughtful approach to planning our commercial district. So, more liquor licenses are not good for Sudbury. Massachusetts state law allows 1 full liquor license per 5,000 residents. This law protects the safety of our residents, especially those under 21. According to the 2016 housing production plan for the town of Sudbury, 50% of Sudbury households have children under the age of 18. Sudbury is already at the state limit with 4 full licenses. The license law is not archaic. It was made because alcohol is a drug. Is Sudbury saturated? If you look at Waltham, with a population of just over 62,000, they have 11 liquor stores, 1 full liquor store for every 5,657 residents. Marlboro has a population of just under 40,000. They have 9 liquor stores. This is all alcohol liquor stores. 1 full liquor store for every 4,379 residents. Sudbury has a population of just over 18,000. A yes vote tonight would give us 5 full liquor stores. 1 full liquor store for every 3,663 residents. Ask yourselves, does Sudbury need more full liquor licenses per capita than Waltham or Marlboro? Does Sudbury really need another place to buy liquor? Is there really a public need? What is the relationship between outlet density and alcohol problems? A number of studies have found that in and near neighborhoods where there is a high density of places that sell alcohol, there is a higher rate of violence. The density of alcohol outlets has also been found to be related to other alcohol problems such as drinking and driving, higher rates of motor vehicle-related pedestrian injuries, and child abuse and neglect. This next slide is from the 2015 annual report from the Alcoholic Beverages Control Commission. In 2015, this is the minimum purchase age compliance check, and the states or the towns that are orange have a 15 to 25% failure rate. The red are 25%. Let's zoom in. Since 2015, Sudbury has added or opened 4 additional beer and wine and liquor stores: Craft Beer, Duck Soup, which is on the east side of Route 20, Sperry's, Stony Brook, and the town center. Sudbury already had one of the highest failure rates in 2015. So we had 4 new stores, higher failure rate. Adding another liquor license is like adding fuel to the fire. Sudbury is already at the state-mandated limit for full liquor licenses. 4 out of 7 stores already sell liquor. 6 stores selling beer and wine are within a half mile of each other on Route 20. Now, when I first thought about this a couple of weeks ago when I started doing my homework, I thought it was a mile. It's a half mile. We haven't even built Meadow Walk. Meadow Walk is going to have a Whole Foods, which has already inquired about a beer and wine license. There's going to be retail space there. We can bet that there might be a liquor store there. So actually on that slide, can we go back? I think their martini glasses are the full liquor license. And then the beer mugs are the beer and wine. So you can get a look at, see where they are. Why vote no on Article 6? Voting no helps to keep intact our town's character as a premier family town. If you look back at our master plan from 2001, which the Board of Selectmen are looking at in their goals for 2017, that was critically important to the town of Sudbury. Voting no keeps us within state-mandated guidelines that are not archaic, but are in place to protect our safety, especially for residents under the age of 21. Again, I'll remind you, 50% of Sudbury's residents have children under the age of 18. The reason the state sets this limit is because alcohol is a drug. These guidelines help keep towns safe. Voting no makes sure we are not the highest liquor outlet per capita in the area.
Ms. Stretler, time's up. How much more time do you need?
30 seconds.
Very good.
Does Sudbury want to set a precedent? If we say yes to this extra liquor license, how could we say no to the remaining 2 outlets in town who now just carry beer and wine? And once those 2 other outlets acquire full liquor licenses, Sudbury could become one of the highest per capita for liquor outlets in the state of Massachusetts. Article 6 is not good for Sudbury. Vote no. And I just wanted to point out that we do have about 100 petitions that were signed by people that are in opposition to Article 6.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Who else wishes to be heard on Article 6? Okay. I'm going to recognize Mr. Hiltz, and he is not a resident, but I did speak to him earlier today. Ken Hiltz he's a 1980 LS grad. He's a veteran. He lived and worked in town for most of his life.
he recently moved to Marlboro for love, I'm told, currently works at Sudbury Wine and Spirits. So is there a motion to allow Mr. Hiltz to speak to the hall? Does that receive a second? All those in favor? Any opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Mr. Hiltz, you have the floor. Can you give him a microphone, please?
Hi, I'm Kenny Hiltz, 139 Phelps Lane, Marlboro, Massachusetts. I've worked most of my adult life here in the town of Sudbury in the beer, wine, and liquor industry. One of the things that I'd like to speak about is the competition in the industry. And everyone believes that competition is good, and so do I. I don't believe there's anything wrong with it. But I think what's happening here is it's just becoming watered down. I mean, really, how much competition can the people that are already here sustain? It can't go on, because it's just going to continue to go on. The next people that come and the next people. And the reality is, what happens is, then the people can't afford the quality help. People like Kevin, who is a great guy, or like I like to think myself. Eventually, what you end up with is you're going to walk into your store and you're going to ask for a Sauvignon Blanc, and they're going to say, we don't sell that thing to you. I mean, that's what's going to happen. You know, we talk about fair competition. Well, the Sperry's will have a store on Route 20 with TJ Maxx is, and right down the road, you know, in the Starbucks shop, within a couple miles of each other. Is that fair playing field? I think not. I think you're asking me to play with two strikes and giving them four. I would ask that you vote no. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hiltz. Who else wishes to be heard on Article 6? Okay, I got a whole bunch of people over here. Right here, this gentleman right here. Please stand up. Yep.
My name is John Byrne. I'm from 53 Basswood Ave. When I first looked at the agenda for today, I saw the things we're voting on today, and then I saw a liquor license. Are you kidding me? We're looking about an additional liquor license. And so I just quickly looked into it, and I realized that to do what you... I guess there's no other liquor license. You actually ask your customers to sign a petition. You want a full liquor license, and you submit it to the Board of Selectmen, and it almost seems like a done deal. It just seems like you're just circumventing the rules. I mean, we just had a pretty good presentation. I don't know this woman right here, but she seemed to make a lot of sense. And for anybody who lives in Sudbury, and most of obviously live here, how many times do you go by the Stop and Shop? I go by it almost every single day. I go to the gym there. I do business around there. The fact you, because you may have you can get your Jim Beam for a little bit cheaper. If you get a Sudbury license, Sperry's, just go right down the street. It's not that inconvenient. We don't need any more liquor stores and with full liquor license in Sudbury. This is not downtown Boston. We aren't Marlboro. We're Sudbury. And I'm going to vote no on this.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to recognize the woman all the way in the back.
Hi. Linda Murray, 623 Peckham, the horse farm across from Ty Sales. I was driving down the street counting the number of banks today. There was 6. And 0.7 of a mile. When I want to roll over a CD, I look for the highest rate. And I shop at the banks. So when I want the best price, best quality, and the friendliest people, I shop. And I go to Sperry's. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else wishes to be heard? I'll get to you in just a second. Who else wishes to be heard? Anybody that hasn't spoken tonight? This gentleman right here. Mr. Coe, you're next.
Dick Williamson, 21 Pendleton Road. I just want a little clarification on the process of applying for liquor licenses. Are liquor licenses usually, the procedure is for a particular business to request a liquor license and then for the town to take initiative, or does the town request additional liquor licenses and then have the option of where to assign those licenses. It's unclear to me what the process is.
Town manager, you want to take that?
Sure. It can happen either way, so I've seen it done in two different ways. You can either have a home rule petition for just additional licenses that are not tied to a location, or you can have a home rule petition that is drafted like this one where it is tied to a location. So it can be done in either manner.
Okay. Mr. McKinnon just asked to be recognized. He is another non-resident, 2005 graduate of Lincoln Sudbury, 25-year resident, unfortunately now lives in Waltham. He is an attorney. Don't hold that against him. Is there a motion to allow Mr. McKinnon to speak? Is there a second? All in favor? Any opposed? Mr. McKinnon, you have the floor. That passes by well more than a majority.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
You're welcome.
John McKinnon, 650 South Street, Waltham. Thank you, Mr. Moderator, and thank you, everyone, for allowing me to speak tonight. As Mr. Moderator said, I'm John McKinnon. I'm a resident of Waltham, former resident of Sudbury. I grew up in Sudbury for about 25 years. Recently moved to Waltham, unfortunately. I love the town of Sudbury. I have great memories, fond memories. I have a lot of family that live here, friends, former employers that live here. So while I'm not technically a resident of Sudbury, I guess you could consider me a concerned former resident and hopefully future resident when I move back here in the upcoming years. So I'm here tonight to support the petitioner, Eastbrook Inc., Sperry's, its employees, and most importantly, its manager, Kevin Gelsina, who I've known for quite some time. I ask everyone here to also consider voting yes for Article 6. I won't waste a lot of your guys' time. I know it's getting late. So I'll just quickly go over why I'm supporting this article and also why I think that you guys should consider it as well. I guess when I hear a lot of the opposition, I have a little bit of frustration. I know there's opposition to this, and that's what makes town meeting great. Dealing with opposition is what I do for a living every day as an attorney, so I'm used to it. But I think what gets buried in a lot of the politics behind things like this is just the, not the license itself, but the caliber of the people and the business owners that are here requesting assistance from residents of the town. Again, I mentioned I know Kevin Gelsinon. He runs the Sperry's downtown in Sudbury. I've known him for many years, and I really couldn't say enough about the guy. He's probably a little embarrassed that I'm up here, you know, going on and on about him. But my family used to own McKinnon's Liquor Store on Concord Road, right across from Mill Village. For those who aren't familiar with the store, it started out as one of the first grocery stores in the town and developed into a liquor store. They remained in town for quite some time until closing in the 2000s. Kevin, who's the manager of the Sperry's, he started out working at McKinnon's as a younger kid. And as he mentioned, he continued working there for many years until the store closed its doors. While I didn't personally run that store, I know just from conversations with my father, my uncle, and other family members that ran the store that Kevin was one of the best employees that they could have had, one of the best that they could have asked to work for them. He's a very hardworking, responsible guy, very, very respectful and friendly. And I think that that's something that the prior business, McKinnon's, took a lot of pride in. They took a lot of pride in, I guess, the old school Sudbury values of running the business, running it well, and while doing so, being respectful and very friendly to the customers, never hesitating to stop someone and see how their soccer game went or, you know, how their kids were doing in college. That was just the way that it was. And Kevin, while working there, contributed to that and was a big part of that. So. While the family's moved on and the liquor store's no longer in business there, I know that if my father was standing here today, he'd be standing up saying the same thing about Kevin Gelsinon, except it'd probably be a little funnier and he'd probably be going on until he got cut off by the moderator. So,
give it a whirl.
But he'd also be up here saying how, you know, excited and how proud he is to have somebody from the prior liquor store carry on the values, you know, the old school Sudbury values of hard work, respect, and genuine friendliness. And he'd also be saying to you guys that you should be very proud to have people that carry those values and that will go forth and carry that through with another business in town. So In conclusion, I'm just really here, you know, I don't have any fancy slides or statistics, but I'm just, you know, letting you know that what I know personally from experience. And as residents, I think you guys should feel very comfortable and very confident with who will be running that Sperry's downtown. Kevin, I think he's a longtime resident, like you said. He's got great character, he cares deeply about the town, and I think that a person like this is someone who we should provide all the necessary tools to succeed with their business. So you mentioned watering down the businesses and watering down competition, but I think that something like this, I mean, you really can't water down the quality of the people that work for the town, and you got to give them all the tools necessary to succeed. So with that, that includes encouraging you guys to vote yes for Article 6. And again, thank you for letting me speak, and have a good night.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Nichols, all the way in the back.
If Mr. Sperry's business...
Name and address again, please.
Sorry, Roger Nichols, 220 Old Lancaster Road. If Mr. Sperandello's business stops operating, what becomes of the license?
Town manager, you want to take that?
The way that the home rule is drafted, the license would stay with the property. So it would stay at 450 Boston Post Road.
Does that mean we permanently have five licenses?
It would still, right. It would stay with the property. It would still have to go through a normal licensing process. So the person would have to apply for the license to the Board of Selectmen, and that license would have to be approved by the Board of Selectmen, but it could not be approved at another address.
But we could continue to have five stores.
We would continue to have the additional license, yes.
Okay. Mr. Hardenberg.
I think I have basically the same question, but I'd like to phrase it in a different way. Are we upgrading one of our five licenses, or will the beer and wine license continue to exist and we could give that to a new store?
We're getting an additional license. The beer and wine license would continue to exist.
Mr. Stein, right here.
I'm Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. Enough is enough. What Jane's chart showed was that if we approve this, we'll have about 3,000 and change per population. But again, what she needed to stress, that I will, our population is 50% under the age of 18. So if you take out the underage children, then the ratio is 1 out of 1,800 and 1,900. Waltham and the other towns that are mentioned does not have the same population of children as us. So clearly, we're oversaturated. Right across the street, is Sudbury Wine and Spirits. Right across the street, probably 200 feet, 300 feet. Enough is enough. Please explain how this will increase the quality of life of Sudbury. It is no actual benefit to the quality of life of this town giving another liquor license. And what's to stop, in all fairness, to the new craft beer and wine that opened up at Mill Village? If he comes forward, obviously his business is going to be hurt because of this. What's to stop Sudbury Farms? Because now another liquor store is in town to go for a full liquor license. What's to stop Whole Foods to come in and ask for a full liquor license? Why would we? What right do we have to deprive those people and give this out of towner the right to increase the liquor store? Enough is enough. We have enough.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Okay, we have some very strong polar views on this question. Does anyone have any additional information or commentary they want to add to this Article 6? There's a gentleman right over here.
Matthew Agostino, 225 Raymond Road. I just kind of want to echo those sentiments, but I just want to kind of remind everybody that it's wonderful that the owner of Sperry's is a wonderful man and has had all these great relationships and done well for himself, but the issue is not the man. It is adding this extra liquor license. Doesn't affect everybody in this room, but my property actually abuts the back of that plaza. And since Sperry's has gone in, there has been an increase in loitering in those back parking lots. It's just one of those things. You know, I have young kids in my home. I have neighbors that have young kids, and it's just speaking more to the wonderful PowerPoint presentation that the woman gave us, just showing what alcohol and the presence of alcohol and the increased presence of alcohol can do to a town. And as many people have said, there's so many right in this little half mile. It's ridiculous to bring up arguments that we need one going on the eastbound way when you can shoot right across the road to another one. As you said, enough is enough.
Okay. Everybody got enough information on this? Okay. All right. Anyone have a burning desire to add something new? 30 seconds right here. No, hold on a second. Right here.
Kirsten Repentian, I do have a question.
Why?
I'm hearing this discussion taking place about non-compliance or I forget the phrase that you used, Janie, about the police and some of the visits to these stores. And I'm just wondering what the police have to say about this and any other issues that would include public safety as far as loitering and all that, whether they have anything that they can add just to that. And just as a side comment, while I don't really have any opinion one way or the other about this in particular, I feel like we're talking about a business, and regardless of whether we agree or disagree with what kind of business it is, you know, we need to remember that this is a capitalistic society. Last time I checked, and we have about 50,000 nail salons in Sudbury, and as I think Linda Murray said, we have banks opening up another liquor store. May or may not do anything, but it's a business as far as I can tell.
Okay, Chief, do you have anything to say on this issue?
I believe the violations that Ms. Stretler is referring to is the ABCC's checks, not the Sudbury Police checks. We have not had any issues with Sperry's as far as that goes. As far as the loitering goes, the town is working with residents of the area due to numerous businesses in there, not necessarily specifically Sperry's being there, but there's a new restaurant and other things. But we are trying to work on that in trying to have everybody be good neighbors of that place. But the violations were strictly the ABCC's violations, not ours.
Okay. Are you ready for a vote? Okay. All right. According to your warrant, this requires a majority vote to pass. And that is, in fact, correct. So all those in favor of passing the motion under Article 6, please raise your cards. All those opposed, motion fails. Before we take up the last article, I'd like to recognize and thank a few people. First, Town Manager Melissa Murphy-Rodriguez and her staff, who all work very hard to organize and prepare every detail of this meeting. Thank you, Melissa. Thanks also to the Town Clerk and Town Council, whose contributions are invaluable. Article 7, Poles, Overhead Wires, and Structures Program Study. Motion by Bill Schneller.
Can you tell me the parameters? My name is Bill Schneller, 37 Jarman Road.
You need to start by saying your name and address, and then I move in the words of the article.
Okay, I said my name. I'll repeat it. Bill Schneller from 37 Jarman Road, and I move in the words of the article.
Does that motion receive a second? It does. Mr. Schneller, for a presentation.
Okay. This article is about something else that there's a whole lot of on Route 20 and other places in town. It's about existing poles and wires. I think first I'll just read the article. It is to see if the town will vote to request that the planning board conduct preliminary consideration and study of a program, A, prohibiting new installation or construction of, or B, requiring progressive removal of poles and overhead wires and associated overhead structures within parts of Sudbury, as per the provisions of Mass General Law, Chapter 166, Section 22B. So this is about a study that's required by that law, which I'll explain a little later. It's really about planning and preparation and coordination. It's about making Sudbury more vibrant, safe, and appealing, as opposed to less. I petitioned for the article to gather facts, opinions, and learn what's involved in this law, the potential. I spoke personally with over 100 people, and it was very easy to get signatures. The reactions I got were things like, that's a no-brainer, that's just good planning, or kill two birds with one stone, which I'll get at. I guess I'll read the report as well, and then the rest of my slides I won't read verbatim, but this was my explanation in the warrant. That poles and overhead wires can detract from the beauty, character, public health, public safety, health, convenience, or welfare of parts of Sudbury. Mass General Law provides for a program to prohibit and progressively remove certain kinds of poles and wires in parts of town. Towns including Needham have used this program. That's how I learned about it. I was talking to the Needham DPW director. This article requests that the planning board conduct this preliminary study to determine the potential scope and what is involved in coordinating such a program. Having such a study in hand could make it easier to coordinate the burying of existing wires if the streets are dug up for another project. Speaking of McKinnon's, here's a picture of how it looks today. Going west on Route 20, if you made a right, you'd be going up Concord Road. Straight ahead is the old McKinnon's. To the left is Duck Soup. And, mind you, this is the King Philip Historic District. But I'll be honest, when I first moved to Sudbury, I'd heard it was this bucolic town. This was one of the first views I got. This and then going further down, seeing all the plazas and all the wires. And I didn't think of it as very bucolic at that first visit. The next slide. It's just an illustration of, how it might look differently if the wires were removed, buried, and the poles removed. And who knows, maybe we wouldn't. It would be more encouraging to have a nice downtown, if you will. Next slide. Here's just another picture. This is further down Route 20. The Raytheon plant, the future Meadow Walk. And, I stare at those things, and maybe some people don't notice them, but they just jump out at me, and I think, Tom Brady would have trouble, throwing the ball between those wires. So it's not a couple of wires. It's just stacked upon stacked upon stacked. Anyway, so, when I picture this beautiful new downtown district that's been planned and been on the town's master plan for a while, those just sort of stick out at me as, they shouldn't be there. Next slide. Okay, so the study objective is, to evaluate removing those poles, burying the wires, to do some prioritization of road sections, the benefits and costs of different sections, get an understanding of the complexity, the funding mechanisms, and learn from other towns. There are a few others that have done this. And to prepare for a vote, as per Mass General Law 166, Section 22, sometime next year. This is not binding. You'll notice I didn't ask for any money. But it is, to get the sort of the will, the opinion of the town about whether this is a good thing for the planning board and planning staff and maybe citizen volunteers to work on. Next slide. The reason I pegged the planning board was not because I wanted to just throw work on their plate. But the law as written says it's the planning board of any town, after doing such a study, preliminary consideration study. I paraphrased a bit, but I just want to make a point. They can A and or B, either prohibit or require progressive removal of poles. I'm focused on the removal because we've already got these ugly things there. I believe the town's, the town's bylaws. Can I have another minute or two?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, the town's bylaws, I think, already you know, for new subdivisions prevent wires, but this is to make it better. And the law requires that a report be filed, and so it needs to be done to enter this process. Next slide. And it is a process that, you know, has teeth to it. You know, it compels utilities to work together, if that's what the town wants, to get this done. And, you know, you have to figure out in what sequence, what priority you would want to proceed. Now, the mechanics for paying for it, I didn't. It's a big, long law. To be quite honest, that's kind of why you need a study. I want to go into this eyes wide open and understand everything about it. But, you know, right now I'm not asking for any sort of a vote to spend any money, just a study. Side note, this law does not, it cannot on the face of it, prohibit high-voltage transmission lines. So I'm not entering this saying, oh, boy, if we do this, what am I going to speak to next? Next slide. First, just study resources. You know, can this get done? Well, we've got the planning board, the planning department staff. I visited with all of them, as well as the board of selectmen. We got citizen volunteers, and there's lots of data out there that we can leverage. Next slide. Okay, so now why the urgency? There's this Eversource project, if you haven't heard about it. Eversource, Sudbury to Hudson transmission line. Later this month, you know, in the same room, on October 26th, Eversource is going to be here at the Board of Selections meeting presenting to you, you know, what they recommend to do to solve this reliability problem. They have lots of options. No matter what, it's going to, you know, be spending tens of millions of taxpayers, ratepayers' money throughout all of New England. If they choose to go under streets, I look at it glass half full. It's a one-time opportunity to improve the business district and remove things. If they clear cut, as you'll see in the next slide, it's permanent destruction of our conservation lands, Hopbrook conservation land, which the town has invested in, and, you know, threatens our water supply if they go there and use their herbicides. There's an opportunity here to make a choice between beautifying or uglifying the town. I would ask you to vote yes to see what's possible. And, you know, my hope is that, on the left is a nicer downtown, and on the right is a swath of clear-cut land. Imagine that's our Hopbrook and Memorial Forest. And my hope is that, when the state siting board considers, you know, the siting of this line or energy or whatever facilities they choose to solve this problem, that they would, you know, keep in mind that the town of Sudbury actually, you know, has a wish to be beautiful and not ugly. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article, but it's with the understanding that what we have in front of us is a request. And this would be a request to put this on the Planning Board's list of things to do. This is not a request to put it at the top of the list, and that the Planning Board retains the right to set their own priorities.
Does anyone from the Planning Board wish to speak on this? Mr. Hebert, Chairman of the Planning Board.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Planning Board
name and address, please.
I'm sorry. Pete Hebert for the Planning Board.
Address, please.
14 Dawson Drive.
Thank you.
Thank you. We had a meeting last week of the Planning Board, one of our regularly scheduled meetings. Discussion of this article was not an agenda item in the public meeting notice for that meeting. So the petitioner did appear before us, and we had an informal discussion only as a miscellaneous item. So as a result, the Planning Board took no vote, and we have no recommendation to town meeting on this, but the Planning Board will accept any charge given to it by the town meeting and do our best. Thank you.
Anybody wish to be heard on Article 7? Ms. Rupenian.
I just have a couple of questions here. Relative to one of the lines in the article said that there would be for all intents and purposes, undergrounded in certain parts of Sudbury. Have those certain parts been identified? Because if the planning board's going to use time and resources, I would want to know that they're specifically targeting the Route 20 area or something, because as you probably know, on the sewer committee, we looked at undergrounding the wires, and there were a lot of obstacles, but that doesn't mean they're insurmountable. I guess the question is, specifically, do you have areas in mind that you're going to be looking at in order to get this thing done so that you can give the planning board some adequate notice?
Sure, yeah. I think picking up on, you know, prior studies and initiatives, such as you mentioned, the downtown business district on Route 20 is one. To some degree, anticipating where this project from Eversource might choose to go. You know, I want the town to be in a position that if some streets are going to get dug up, that at least the possibility of a silver lining and you know, beautifying, if it's worth the trouble. I think the priority would be Route 20. I don't out of the box say, you know, the entire length of Route 20, but, you know, sort of the study would reveal, you know, sort of looking at the latest and greatest, you know, sort of the complexities down there where I showed some pictures. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Who else went? Right here.
Ed Comstock, 326 Dutton Road in Sudbury. I grew up in Massachusetts, but I lived 32 years of my adult life in communities that had all underground power and services. When I had the opportunity to move back to Sudbury 10 years ago, I was appalled at the power lines that degrade the quality of life, if you will, as you come into this town. It's totally inconsistent with all the rest of the values that we have and the things that we're fighting for, as you talked to earlier. So my point is, I certainly would endorse a study be done. I think the planning board should be ready and prepared to determine what the opportunities might be, and should the opportunity present itself, to be able to jump on it.
Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 7? Mr. Morley.
Chris Morley, 3210 Lancaster Road. I am a member of the planning board. Just for the hall's sake, I wanted to confirm with Mr. Schneller two things, one of which I've already forgotten in the walk over here. Hopefully it will come to me. But the first one is, because I'm not sure it was in the presentation, but if, for instance, we were to pass a law that's allowed by Mass General Law, whatever, who pays to underground the wires? That's the first one. I'll try to think of the second one.
My understanding is that the Mass General Law, you know, I think there's 22 A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, or something like that, that it is paid for out of the a capped percentage of the utility's revenues. So basically, you know, your electric or other utility bills. But I'll be the first to say that the reason for a study, in my opinion, is to get very clear on what the costs are and answer that question, who pays. I know it's a very expensive proposition, and that's sort of why the timing of the request is, okay, if it was a standalone project, it would cost just that much more. If it were coordinated with some other project that is mandated from on high, there might be an opportunity to have cost savings. I think at worst I've heard a cap of 7% until the thing is paid off, and I think you can't do it all at once. You have to sort of meter it out over time. So it's a question to be answered by the study.
Okay, and just to be clear, that nothing in this article discusses any kind of appropriation of funds. Just so it's clear to the hall. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm also that approval here isn't telling the selectmen or the planning board to actually spend tax dollars on a report. It's asking for some resources we already have to do a report.
That is my intention, and I'm not trying to ask the planning board to do something and the staff that they're not capable of. I do not exactly know from the law you know, just how detailed. They call it a preliminary study, but in my opinion, it's deep enough to be able to make an eyes wide open decision at a later time, you know, to show the study, say, this is what's involved, people. You know, do you think we should pursue this? Okay. And I will note, I've met the planning board staff, Negan and Beth, and I know they come with great credentials. Beth, I believe, worked for Mass DOT, and so, you know, my hope is that some of her experience, you know, with that entity, you know, would be helpful.
Okay, this gentleman right here. Yes. Okay, do we have enough information to vote on this? Everybody feel good about it? Okay, before we do, this Boy Scout right here, could you say your name? That's Colton Simon. We have a Boy Scout over here. What's your name? Put it in, say it into the microphone.
Andrew Mossy.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your help tonight. We couldn't do it without you. Okay, on to a vote. The quantum of vote required for passage of this is a majority, correct?
Yes.
All right. All those in favor of the motion under Article 7, please raise your cards. All those opposed? That passes nearly unanimously, but by well more than a majority. Congratulations, Mr. Schneller. Motion to adjourn is second. All in favor? Motion to dissolve.